Hello and welcome to episode 288 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is John and I play Protector Domenoth.
Nigel and I play Kador.
Crump and I play Rhett.
This is Chad and I play Trolls.
This is Keith and I play Signar.
Nice. Well, we're fresh back from War Machine Weekend. What a weekend.
Yeah, it was good.
I had a good time, as per usual. Oh, barbecue. Delicious barbecue.
Yeah, it's actually just barbecue board games weekend now.
Yeah, Jim rebranded it as BG BBQMW. He left the machine on there. I don't know why.
BBQ machine?
Yeah, because, we're all machines at eating an entire pig.
Yeah.
I actually might be a little BBQ'd out. I ended up at Sugar Fire 3 times and Bogart's once, which was a little too much.
Yeah, I had Bogart's once and Sugar Fire once. So basically barbecue. I had ribs every day.
You guys are ridiculous.
Smoke meat.
I was Colin and John were like complaining about the food. I was like, how dare you?
How dare you?
Like, seriously. I would eat Sugar Fire 3 times a day for my entire life if I had to be on an island and only
like,
eat the one thing.
Oh, woe is me.
Woe is me. I'll have that pulled pork this week or, you know, whatever. I'll have to have that awesome brisket. Yeah.
I did barbecue once a day and I ordered enough to eat and then have it later to basically be my only food for the day.
Yeah.
Wisdom.
And it was amazing.
Chad and I got butter slabs.
Oh, they were good.
This is the fattest way of describing food is in slab form.
butter slabs.
I guess it's a...
They were delicious.
I guess it's a St. Louis thing called gooey butter. It's like a thing out there.
Okay.
It's like a pastry that it's just... some chef somewhere like messed it up by putting too much butter in one day, and then he was just like, this is good. Yeah. I'm just going to sell
this. Like, it's a lemon bar, but instead of lemon, it's like buttery flavored instead of tartness.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's just really good.
Yeah. I was like, it's really rich.
It sounds disgusting. Yeah. Oh, it's super rich.
I think I've actually had it, and it is pretty good. It's just sort of, it's super like, ugh.
Yeah. I had to eat it in like 2 sittings.
It's dense. Yeah, Colin was not a fan.
Did he not eat it?
He did. He's not a fan.
He's just like, I am not a fan. Home. Home. Oh. Home. Man.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. So I only actually played one game of War Machine, which I'm kind of ashamed about.
I played 3. Although,
how did John play the most?
Because I always play the most games at that cons.
Kind of true.
Yeah.
No, usually
I played 2. I played 2.
Yeah.
Same.
So there, I'm the lowest.
Actually,
besides Colin.
Yeah.
I would have only played 2, but I kind of got roped into a 3rd.
Yeah. No, he had no choice. It was either John hates kids with cancer, or he's playing this game of War Machine.
Yeah.
I actually planned to play 2, and then I decided that I just wanted to duck out on Timmy Simps.
Yeah,
on my yearly game with Timmy Simps.
Yeah,
so.
Tim decided that was because you didn't want to have to buy the ribs once.
No.
So he was amenable to buying barbecue again.
My favorite thing of the weekend was that I got pretty drunk on Friday night because Tim Pankey walked up to Keith and I basically and gave us like a 2/3 full bottle of that maple whiskey, and he was just like, you guys look like discretionary gentlemen. Like, I trust that if I give you this bottle that I can come back and it will be empty, correct? And we were like, we could probably make that happen. So we ended up drinking, half to two-thirds of a bottle of whiskey in a couple of, about 30 minutes, I would say, like, very quickly.
And that stuff is delicious.
That's how you can do it that quickly. Because normally whiskey makes me throw up, but that's literally just maple syrup.
Yeah.
It's delicious and 80 proof.
Yeah. It's 80 proof maple syrup. So I got pretty
80 proof maple syrup.
I got pretty drunk.
Yeah.
And Tim was coming up to me and he's just like, hey, how about we play our game now? Like, I was like, I'll kick your ass. Come on, let's go. Get your stuff. And he's just like, what? Like,
how could you be so mean?
And he's just like, he was flabbergasted. He's just like, no, you won't. And then he went and he said, so Colin came up to me later and he was just like, yeah, Tim just came up to me and he was like, oh, Chad's like super drunk right now, and he thinks that he could still beat me at War Machine. And Colin's like, yeah, he could.
I was there with him.
And Colin's like, yeah, he could.
We were both, yeah. And Tim tells us, and we're both like, yeah, he probably would. You're playing Vlad 2, right? Or Vlad 3, right? And he's just like, no.
That was good, though. I'm sad that we didn't get to play, but yeah, it was like, I just wanted to play board games on Friday night. It was too fun. I didn't want to pull myself away from it.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But I did want to play. It's like tough because I did want to play War Machine going into the weekend. It's just like,
there's a lot of cool things to do.
I'm kind of turning into John. Like, this is horrifying. The primary reason I didn't play was because I was just like, I don't want to go get my models out. Like,
right?
Oh, God, this feels so gross.
Let me tell you what motivates you to play a game of War Machine.
Yeah?
We had a podcast listener who's been a long time. He's been on our forums forever. His name is Zach. And he works for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
Okay.
And he came up to me and he said, hey, do you want to play a game? This was like 11:30 on Saturday night. And I'm so cashed out. Like, I'm almost dead. And I'm like, no, I'm going to bed. Because this is already like an hour and a half past my bedtime. And I turn into a pumpkin after midnight. And look at me now. And he's
yeah, that's because you stayed up past 11:30.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly why. Yeah. But he looks at me and he says, I'll tell you what, John. I will donate $100 to charity in your name, charity of your choice, if you'll play a game of War Machine with me.
You can't turn that down.
I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, he got me. And I'm like, I can't even like hesitate for too long. And then Chris Weinstein looks at me and says, oh, yeah, he hates kids with cancer. Can't you see?
Yeah, Chris is awesome.
Got him.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, no, we'll 100% play.
All right.
And then his friend looks at me and says, if you beat him, I'll match the donation.
Ooh.
So,
wow, on the line.
Yeah, so it was awesome. But I told him he didn't have to make the donation or anything, but he's already done it. But I should have played him anyway. Because he was just a sweet dude, and I had a great game.
He was a sweet dude. Yeah. We met that guy last year, actually. He's the guy with the crazy mustache twirl.
Yeah, he's sweet.
Yeah, he's really cool. Yeah.
Zach.
I got a brief pass with him. Yeah. Which was basically like, I hear you're trolling John into playing a game of War Machine with you. You're doing God's work.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I always mean to get us. Every year I mean to get a scramble going, and it's happened once.
Oh, yeah. I remember one time we did it with like Jake and Chuck and everybody. That was fun.
You talked about it too on Friday night, and I was just all for. I was like, "Yeah, let's do-. Like I was gung ho for it. Like, yeah, let's do it. That's a good idea.
I have a better idea. I don't know if Zach would be up for this, but he's the coordinator for fundraising for St. Jude, and he talked to me about maybe working with MomCon and setting up a fundraiser. What if we set up a scramble and let people donate? You know, like
a bid war.
Well, the podcasters would be in the scramble, and then we would let people donate.
Oh, sort of like how they use the just like an NCAA bracket thing.
Well, just people could jump in the scramble, but they would have to donate, and it'd be like the highest donations.
It's like it'd be like a bidding war to get into the into the bracket.
Yep,
that could be cool.
Get into the scramble,
and we could raise money for St. Jude, and then we could play some games, and it'd be fun.
That would be cool.
So maybe we'll set that up for MomCon because we have control over it. So I don't know.
I do like that the March Madness idea actually. Like, do a scramble with, you know, whatever.
Just pick people.
Yeah, just have, like, 8 dudes in the scramble and then just do the March Madness for it, you know.
And then just have that.
We have, like, pre-painted minis to, like, raffle off or, you know, to give away to the winners of it. But, like, all the money would go to charity.
Yeah.
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 All right, we'll work on that more, but I think it's a good idea.
I agree.
And for a good cause. So,
yeah. Yep. John continuing to try to prove he doesn't hate kids with cancer.
I don't hate kids with cancer! And I'm really glad Josh isn't here, because that would 100% become a thing if Josh was here. Yeah. But luckily,
that'd be so
crazy
easy.
John!
It'd be so easy to edit that don't out. Oh, it'd be so easy.
Who's editing this week?
Not me.
John, you might want to edit this week.
It might be good. It might be good.
It's just like, I hate kids with cancer.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, it was a good weekend. I don't know. Is there anything else you guys wanted to... Keith, how about you? How'd your weekend go?
It went really well. I spent most of it playing board games. I did play in the LCQ, and my first round went fine. Played against a Protectorate player with Resnik 1, and there was a couple turns I almost left Kane an inch too close to a Warjack after, like, Perdition and it being Fire of Salvation. But we measured at the beginning of his turn, and you're like, oh, you're safe by an inch. And I was like, oh, well, that's good.
This is convenient.
Good.
And then my next game was my first game against Wormwood. And I mean, I knew the theory of the Wormwood game, and my opponent was great. Really strong player from Seattle who ended up going pretty far in the tournament. I don't think he quite made top 8, but I think he was in the top 16. So spoiler alert, I lost. I feeded and killed Cassius and the stone that Wormwood was in, and then ran my Warjacks at him, basically. And then the next turn, he strangleheld both of my Stormclads and put and just basically camped up. And so my goal was to try to kill him, and I managed to get a Stormclad onto him even when he was strangleheld, because I got Espionage and TK giving me a like a 6.5-inch threat range under Wormwood's feet. And the espionage hit both of my units of Stormlances too, and I was able to put one of them in charge range of Wormwood. And I had him down to, after the Stormclad unloaded, I had him down to 10 health and no transfers. And I just sort of misplaced the Stormlance in the hecticness of the turn and went to do other things. And then by the time I noticed that the Stormlance, who was supposed to charge Wormwood, was still there, my timer had expired because time turns is a B, and I was not prepared for them at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really rough playing time turns when you're used to Death Clock.
Although one Stormlance probably doesn't kill Wormwood, right?
10 health? Yeah, I can get there. It's a dice minus 6. It's a dice minus 6 impact attack, a dice minus 6 assault shot, and a dice minus 3 charge attack.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's really close. That's really, really, really close.
Yeah. You're probably 50-50 to get there, but you could have got there for sure. So.
Yep. And then the next, I survived through the next turn. He killed one of the Stormclads, and I put the remaining Stormclad back on Wormwood again. But he was already a little dinged up, and I lost my cortex to spiny growth about halfway through, which was very likely to happen. I needed to get lucky on that follow-up turn, and I didn't.
So you went 1-1 and dropped and then played board games for the rest of the day?
Yep, board games and barbecue.
It's hard to feel bad about that.
No, I had fun. I wasn't in enough practice to like reasonably expect to be a contender in the LC.
Particularly on time turns, like where practice really hurts you, or lack of practice really hurts you, is
yeah.
In Death Clock, you can sort of like think your way through it.
Right.
You're fine, you know. But
I didn't realize it would be time turns until I was talking to Keith later that day about his games, and I'm just like, oh god, yeah, I would have probably lost in round one or two easily because I have no practice with timed turns. I'm out of practice with the game in general, just period. Like if I have infinite time, and so if you put a clock on me, like yeah, it's just not gonna. And then Madrak.
If I was
playing Madrak, like he takes infinity long on his feet turn.
Yeah, he's got one turn.
Yeah.
Earlier in the day, I was thinking like, oh, I could do really well in this. Like, let's buckle down and have a good couple days of War Machine. And then like, it's time turns. I'm like, never mind. I'm going to lose really early.
Time turns is rough.
Yeah. Kind of didn't really have an option though, logistically, with how many large.
You would need the largest conglomeration of chess clocks in the history of War Machine to do time turns.
Well, the LCQ like was something. Like half as much as last year.
Well, that's true. There was only like 140.
It was 115, I heard, which is still like you know a huge tournament. Yeah.
Fewer than you need for WTC.
That's true. Fair point.
But yeah, it wasn't. I'm not like particularly upset about it because I'm sure it was advertised beforehand.
You don't sound salty about it, like. yeah, I played my game against. I just decided I wanted to play against Sweet Andy Padel, and so I did, and I was like. I can't remember who talked me into it or if I talked myself into it. I was just like, I might as well try out that new caster and see how he's sweet. And it was a sweet game. This was like Friday night after I got pretty drunk. So but it was still sweet.
How'd you like Horgul?
I think he's good. I think he's just kind of boring. And I might change my mind about that if I played him a little bit more. But his feet is really, really strong if they only have like one or two big pieces. And you can just and then you can also dedicate like, you know, your army to killing them.
And you can safely put Horgul within 12 of them.
Correct. Also that, which was almost a problem because I was super scared and I kept Horgul way back. I think this is actually just Andy's like strong play is that he's advertised as such a good caster killer that you're like, oh, God, I got to stay back or otherwise he'll kill me. And then he's just like score 3 points and you're like,
I got to keep my caster back again or he's going to kill me.
Yeah. So he was sort of aggressively moving his army up. He was playing Gareth, and I was playing Horgul too. I squared off my. I kind of liked my list. It was Mountain King, Bomber, two units of Fire Eaters, and Bushwhackers. Bushwhackers are awesome, by the way. Now,
yeah.
So I kind of deployed them, and my army had a lot of advance deploy, which was sweet. I deployed my Bushwhackers across from his Sentinels, and I just peeled off like the front like half of like the front like bit of his Sentinels on the first turn, which is pretty sweet. And then when he ran to engage them, like the next turn, they could just slip away and just continue to shoot them. Like, it was just pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Like, oh, slip away is so good. So, but the way the game ended up happening was he had so aggressively, like, positioned himself towards me. And I was worried because I killed a few of his Sentinels, but not enough that my Mountain King wasn't in danger if he decided to go all in on it with, like, five or six Sentinel charges a fully loaded Phoenix, a fully loaded Discordia, and like probably five or six Halberdier charges with their mini feet. I'm like, even with armor 23, like it's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary enough. So I was manufacturing. So I charged like a clump of three Sentinels with my Mountain King, and then did the assault spray and got it to go on. Like I got it to lay the 10-inch template down on like five or six guys. And they were arm 21 from the mini feet, and I ended up missing almost all of them. But I boosted to hit the leader, the UA leader, and then I didn't boost damage, so I only did 1 point of damage to him. But I deafened him, which means that he can't give or receive orders.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So then I was just like, sweet, I don't have to worry about them. And then I just punched the three guys that were in front of me and just killed them, and then triggered a kill shot and targeted the Phoenix with it. Boosted to hit, boosted damage, and did like, and I rolled like a 15 or a 14 or something like that, and did like 12 damage to it. Like took out its full shield and like got into its tiny little body, you know?
Awesome.
And then it's also -2 defense because of Deafen. So then my bomber just like walked over and hucked two bombs at it, and I just killed it like flat out. Just 3 past 16. Like I rolled good dice. Like I don't think I rolled below a 14 on any of those three damage rolls, but that was sweet.
Did you say you don't have Dunia's Knot in this?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
That's also more impressive that you didn't have Dunia's Knot.
Yeah. Yeah. I just rolled good. Yeah. I mean, my dice were good. The problem was I charged towards one of the zones with my Mountain King, but I didn't get in it. And so I only had like two bushwhackers in like the one zone, and then on the other zone I had like one fire eater. It was kind of behind like in a horseshoe that was formed by a forest that was just on the table, and then a cloud that my swamp gobbers had made. But it was just like one model in that zone, and then a swamp gobber.
Okay.
So he only needed to kill like four models to score 4 points, which he like could easily. He basically easily did, like no problem. And then he basically just jammed the rest of his army around my Mountain King to prevent it from being able to move. So I was, and yeah, and then that was just his plan. Like, I'm going to score three. Like, I'm fairly handily losing on attrition at this point because you've killed a jack. I don't really have anything left that can kill an armor 23 Mountain King, but I'm just going to jam my guys all around it. And I was just like, oh, this is like the one thing that I'm excited about doing with this caster is, and I know Jesse at least was yelling at me to not talk about this on the podcast because he's like, don't get your trolls around it again. Like, you son of a bitch. But they, for his chain attack.
Hungerford already knows.
Awesome. I spotted it like immediately, and I was just like, I want to do this. His chain attack, Horgul has a chain attack if he hits with both of his melee weapons that basically causes, it's called chain attack ignition. And it's if you hit the same melee target with both of your melee attacks, then immediately after the attack, like everything within 2 inches of that model suffers a POW 12 fire damage roll and gets lit on fire.
Oh, you can do it to friendly?
It doesn't specify enemy. So I just,
so you just
punch my Mountain King in the butt. And then he just blows up. And he just blows up. It's like a flaming effigy or whatever.
Just combustion.
Like, oh, my God. That's amazing.
Awesome. And he, like, literally ran, like, all these guys around. And so it was, like, four Sentinels that didn't have, like, they weren't in base-to-base or whatever. So they were just armor, you know, 15. And then, like, four or five Halberdiers that were just, that had to run to get there. So they were, like, armor 13. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be sweet. Like, I'm just going to kill all these guys or most of them or whatever. And even if I don't even have to kill all of them because then I have a fire eater left that can just go and like finish them off. And I have my rune bearer in the back who can do his little like his spell slave thing to cast the fire nuke, like to finish them off, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, this is glorious. And I walked up and my very first attack roll with the caster that I ever made, I rolled snake eyes. And Andy's like, oh, and he takes a picture of it. And I'm just like, son of a bitch. But then since nothing was on the line and we were basically just like, yeah, so that's essentially game because I have no way of – I could have gotten my Mountain King to one zone, but I wouldn't have been able to put anything in the other zone probably. So but then Andy was – like, we were basically just kind of like, okay, well, that's basically game. Like, but Andy's like, I want to see what would have happened because it sounds sweet. So let's just pretend like, you know, you know, he's like, you gave me a reroll earlier. Like, I'm going to give you a reroll on this one. So I was like, oh, thanks, Andy, and got it off. And but like the rest of the way. And then after that, like, divergent point, you know, where he wins one, then I basically cleared out like enough guys that I could run my Mountain King over to the zone that Gareth was in. And then I just jammed all the rest of my stuff in the other zone. The sweet thing, too, is like Discordia was right there and I got to see a little bit of the power of his feet because I put Rage on my bomber. I had my Fire Eater light Discordia on fire. And then my bomber got to, and then I popped my feet on Discordia. So my bomber got to charge for free because he's on fire. And then he's POW 19 with the Creel Stone and Rage. And he's all of his boosted to hit, boosted damage. And I killed him by only spending one fury, which was just like...
Including Phoenix Protocol?
No.
It was Discordia.
Discordia. Not Imperatus.
Not Imperatus.
My bad.
Yeah, just Discordia.
I was just thinking about the wrong Blackjack. But still, that's impressive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a bomber in melee.
It's a pound 19 boost to hit, boost damage, like...
Free charge. Yeah. Boost to hit, like, boost damage,
it's
boost
an unearthly
hit, boost
rage.
Damage.
Yeah, it's an unearthly raged bomber with rage.
Right.
And stone strength. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so you're just basically sixes to hit and then dice plus one on two attacks. Yeah.
Yeah, you're more than 90% to hit and then dice plus one.
Yeah, so three attacks is just average to kill it.
Yeah.
But it felt really good. Yeah, because it's a bomber in melee. Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, geez, if there was another heavy like right next to this guy, I could probably kill two heavies in melee with my bomber.
Or a gargantuan.
I mean, I don't know. Probably not, but depends on whether it's armor buffed or not.
Yeah.
But that's so. Anyway, that's cool. Like, it's just it was a little small demonstration of like, oh, neat. Like, you know, this feat's really good. At least it's really good in specific applications.
So you feel like the Mountain King's going to be good with him then?
I feel like. I mean, it's armor 20. It's just inviolable resolve. Yeah, I feel like it's going to be good with inviolable resolve. So yeah, and then, also rage. So. I don't know if my list is the best list, but it's just what I
threw
together.
Firestarter is really good on bombers, too.
It is.
You're just like, pew!
Yep.
And you're just like, oh, I didn't kill him with blast damage. Oh, well, those like eight dudes are on fire.
Yep. And then you can throw another one.
Yep.
Yeah. And solid ground is really sweet with bushwhackers.
Yep.
So.
Seems all good.
Yeah.
They're just giving out solid ground and hand of fate to everybody now.
Speaking of solid ground, I got to play against Iris, too, this weekend. I had a really interesting game with Norbert. Probably my favorite game of the weekend.
You played? I didn't know you played against Norbert. Why didn't I go peep that game?
Yeah, I didn't either.
We had like a crowd around us.
Oh, it's because it was in the old man tournament.
It was.
It wasn't like their own.
All right, so we weren't allowed in the room, basically.
Yeah.
No, everybody.
Kids,
it was the same.
No kids allowed.
It was the same. Yeah, get off my lawn. Everybody was there, but it was actually a really interesting game. we were playing in the entrenched scenario, which is the one with the two zones that are. Perpendicular, so they're like the long way across, and they have a objective in them. And it was Iris too. He was playing shock troopers, winter guard, riflesmen. He had
behemoth.
He did not have behemoth. He had ruin. He had ruin, and he had a mortar. And his other jack was torch.
Okay,
who's actually really good. I was actually pretty impressed.
Looked like there were IFP as well.
Yep, full IFP. And I think that was everything in his list, plus Joe, of course, for the most part. And I was playing the High Reclaimer list that I've been kind of rocking lately. I had I changed it a little bit, but it had full Vengers, full Flame Guard, full Idrians plus UA, Anastasia Debray, who actually was pretty important in the game. and then I had Devout, Vigilant, Reckoner, Roven and Co. Choir. I think that's everything in that list. But the game was really interesting because with Anastasia, I get a plus one to go first. And there's like a big forest on the right side, my right of the board, which is my close zone. So I put the Daughter Cav over there, and I put my Vengers to the left because they have basically open ground to go over, which is important.
So did you win the roll to go, or did you win the roll and you chose to go second to choose that forest?
No. He chose side. I'm just saying the forest was over there, so I actually... had to put my daughters over there because I didn't want to try to deal with it with my Avengers. Because he basically put the Adrians in the middle and he needed a cab to each side. Because the cab can envelop or they can come to the middle or whatever. but what ended up happening is I thought he did a really smart thing. He deployed the... He had shock troopers with the UA and the solo.
Yeah.
And he deployed them right across from my zone. And his plan was to get them into the zone and then put everything else... in his army, those into my zone and everything else in his army, clear the other zone, win on scenario.
Yeah.
And he's going second. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. I think that's a really good plan. The problem was, and then he also, the other benefit he has for this plan is he's counter-deploying shock troopers to Daughter Cav, which are not great at killing him.
Right.
So I think he's, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's really good deployment, Norbert. Like, you've kind of got me coming and going. Because the other zone's going to have IFP come through it, two jacks, and then the Winter Guard are all going to be shooting everything around there. And those rockets, like, blow up Cav like there's no business. So my first turn, I basically run forward and go to ground with the Idrians and aggressively come way forward. And I get my Cav so far forward that he can't run with his his
shock troopers.
Shock troopers. So his plan was to run and then shield wall into the zone. Well, if he runs, he gets charged by Daughter Cav, and so he's already swearing because he's just like, well, this plan suddenly is not a great plan because they're going to get charged. Like, his only option is to shield wall and walk forward, so he's only 6 inches outside of his deployment zone.
Right.
And then he still gets charged on his turn.
Right.
But
it's better than not being shield walled and getting charged.
Right. So my second turn, like, he moves up aggressively. He moves up in shield wall with his IFP. My Idrians are praying the IFP. And then Idrians with Hand of Fate, they kill the mortar and the mortar guy that's with him. So they take up and it kills them both. And I would have killed almost all of the IFP, but he made like a bazillion tough checks. But it didn't matter because my Cav charged in after and killed like the rest. Mm. There was like three IFP. And then Anastasia came in and ambushed and charged Rocketeer in the back, and it managed to engage another. So I was like, wow, Anastasia for 3 points is actually doing quite a bit here.
Nice.
She's got backstab. But of course, he tough checked that rocket too, like a boss.
Doesn't she have Grievous Wounds? Am I wrong? I may be wrong.
Don't think so, no.
Yeah, I'm probably wrong.
If she does, I didn't remember or didn't look to
check. I think I'm wrong.
Didn't think to check. So anyway, now I've kind of created this situation where I've charged in with my Cav, and it's very hard for him to get anything into either of the zones because I've got Cav basically. My Daughter Cav charges to the right. I've killed his mortar, and the Daughter Cav are past my zone. And then in his zone, my Vengers are basically at the edge of his zone. So he's barely able to get Ruin into the zone, and he kills a bunch of my Cav from both units. The Daughter Cav killed,
which doesn't matter because you have a feat.
Yeah.
Right.
The Daughter Cav killed, like, I think two of the Mao, because you can do tricky things like charge and then sidestep to the back arc, and then they lose their shield wall.
Yep.
And then so that was good. and then, so I score 3 points because I dominate my zone, clear his zone, score it, and kill the objective in his zone, along with killing, like, all that stuff. And so, like, he's in a bad way now.
So it sounds like you won this game basically just on speed.
Yeah, that's all it was. At one point in the game, Norbert just looks down at his, well, and his High Reclaimer's feet. He could have fought back into the game because he killed a bunch of that Cav, but then he gets charged with the Cav again.
Yeah.
So Ruin gets in the zone. They kill a bunch of Cav. There's like two or three IFP in the zone plus Ruin. And even though he made a ton of tough checks, I just used Cav to run all over through that. And then there was nothing he could really get into the other zone because the Daughter Cav had everything pinned and then feated, and then they got charged again. So, and then the only thing he could really do was he took Torch, and he managed to get Torch in the zone. So, you know, I just had to clear Torch out with, I had a Reckoner over there, and I had two Rovan's bodyguards, and a Devout. And the Devout ended up, because the Reckoner got beat up pretty good, so the Devout ended up finishing the deal. I put Hand of Fate on the Devout, and then he just finished off Torch after I charged him with like one Cav. And
Hand of Fate's just too good.
It's really dumb, but the thing that was interesting about the game to me was, like, he had a really good plan for scenario that just went out the window because of the speed of Cav. So it's pretty powerful, like, as long as you can deliver them, which kind of makes me want to play Vinny D a little bit because he makes them even faster and protects them with things like Defender's Ward and his feet. So anyway, it was a good game. Norbert is an amazing opponent. There was like, it was interesting because there was like a lot of achievements and stuff you could do during the game. A lot of really fun stuff. The Senior Port Tour is kind of a fun thing. And we just both played like a very serious game.
It should all be senior related though. Like playing the whole game without having to go to the bathroom. not having to ask your opponent to repeat himself.
No, that's how it was.
It is, but they weren't like making fun of themselves. Like one of them was like, after you clear a zone, yell, like, get off my lawn.
Or it was, prove that you have prescriptions.
Yeah.
Daily prescriptions. Yeah. Or some of the other achievements were pretty funny. There was one, like, after you kill a guy, give a eulogy.
Yeah. like a 1 minute eulogy.
A 1 minute eulogy.
Have to be like,
yeah.
Oh, Billy.
Wow.
Yeah.
The tournament sounds awful.
Yeah. It's because you're young.
I'm glad I'm young.
Yeah.
I'm glad I couldn't play in that pile of garbage.
Yep.
I love that you and Norbert like took it really seriously though. That's actually great.
Well, we're both kind of wired that way.
Yeah, no, I know. We shouldn't mention too. It's just actually great that Norbert was there. Like, period.
Amazing.
I didn't know he was going to be there, and I saw him, and I was just like, "What are you doing here?"
Norbert being there, Norbert and Danny Modesto made me so regret my decision.
Yes.
I was like, "God
I'm an idiot.
I also didn't know Danny Modesto was going to be there. Yeah. And he gave us sweet t-shirts.
Yeah, not me.
The Team Danny shirts?
Not me. That guy is on my shirt list.
Yeah, well, nice. He gave you this sweet Team Danny shirt, but it's an XL. And he's like,
oh, you should ship.
Well, just it's he's being optimistic.
He's like, think of it as motivation. I'm like, thanks, Danny, you're the best.
Yeah. Yeah, I asked for a 2X, and he's like, oh, I got our XLs. And I was like, nah, it looks pretty big. Like, it might be, it fits pretty well. Yeah. So,
just like,
well, the XL does. I mean, the XL fits on me like a t-shirt on somebody from the South, like a, you know,
Daisy Duke. Daisy Duke.
Like Daisy Duke or whatever. Yeah. Not exactly.
Those shirts are sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool to see Danny and Craig back in action.
Yeah.
Yep. So Norbert was probably my favorite game of the weekend. It was.
It's awesome.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
Andy was my favorite game of the weekend.
Nice. I see what you did there.
I got to have dinner with Andy twice, and I got to have dinner with Andy and Danny together. So be jealous.
Me.
Yeah.
Me.
What's up, Beaker?
It's a little bit lower pitched. Anyway.
We should probably talk about the new casters then.
That is correct. We have.
Oh, boy.
Circle Christmas!
The new casters, and yeah, Perpetual Circle Christmas continues into Mark III. Thanks.
Can we instead talk about, like, all the sweet Scorn memes from this week?
Absolutely.
Did you see the post where it's like the four juniors on the Privateer Press store and it's like out of stock, out of stock, out of stock is a dash? Like
$25.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you see Nick very graciously rounded up all of the Scorn players that got past round one in the LCQ?
Yep. I saw that one.
Yep.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. It was amazing.
It was good times.
Yeah. A lot of good memes. Zoja meme.
Yeah, that was a great.
It was fantastic.
If you are not part,
it's actually like it keeps zooming in on Zoja's face because she's. But if you actually look at everyone else in the picture, they're all making like the same like face.
Yeah,
it's just like, oh my god.
Except for that Mike Purrier doppelganger who's just like making schmoop face. There's like one guy because Chili takes a picture of like every round, and every round there's the same guy. He looks like Mike Purrier with a hat. And he's just making the same face. Like, he never changes his expression.
Hmm.
So it's almost like I kept getting confused. Like, is this the same picture? But Zoja is totally different. Like, she's, eyes popping out of her head. Or
this is terrible. I feel like before we move into the junior discussion, we should definitely send out congratulations to Chris Davies, who not only won the LCQ.
Oh, yeah.
Agree.
And then he wins the Invitational after winning IG and the WTC this year. So he's probably going to go down as the. I mean, there's nothing else you can win in a single year, right? So
yeah, that's like an incredible War Machine achievement.
It'll never be duplicated. Yeah. I'll say that right now. Like
probably not.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's an incredible achievement.
He's such a nice guy, too. Like, it's hard not to root for him.
Given that multiple people have been struck by lightning, I'm not going to say ever, but
yeah.
I mean, yeah, fair enough.
But
and he's I think he did. I'm not sure if he did every tournament with a different faction, but I know he wasn't playing Kador. I don't think he was playing Kador at the W.
No, he played Kator at the WTC.
Oh, okay. He just wasn't playing Mad Dogs.
No, he was not playing Mad Dogs. He played. Remember, he played Irisk 2 into Mad Dogs when Bubba was playing it.
Oh, that's right.
During the round of Canada. I believe he was playing Crix, though, at the IG because it was the last Mark II tournament.
Because it was Mark II.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, sweet dude, super nice. Couldn't be happier for him. So it was a very impressive achievement. And like I said,
the two things that the internet has proven is that Australians are better than the rest of the world at War Machine. And that Mad Dogs is a no-skill list. And that it essentially, Chris had nothing to do with his win, and Australians are better than everybody. So that's the two. So, you know, take from that what you
want.
I know.
Wait. All right. It checks out, I guess.
Yeah, it's sound. Sound.
Yep. That's what the internet told me. I wasn't there. I didn't get to see it. Other than I did see it as on streaming.
There are a bunch of really sweet Australians. I put Chris in the sweet crowd.
Not
the sour crowd.
You put him in the Hugh Jackman crowd?
The Paul Hogan crowd.
I put him in the Whaley crowd.
Yeah, that's the Paul Hogan crowd.
Okay,
is Whaley Tasmanian? Is he not even okay?
Yeah, is that not Australian?
I don't know if they. Yeah,
Australian.
Who knows with all like the.
It is part of the continent.
Yeah, but there's also a country, right? Or no? Yeah.
I was under the impression it's kind
of
like...
Yes, it is also part of the country. It is like Hawaii.
It's a state.
Occasionally, if you accuse an Irish person or a Scottish person of being British, they'll like punch you in the dick. Like that's essentially the New Zealand bit, too.
That's 100%
that's a
Tasmania.
Different.
Is it different?
No, New Zealand is its own country.
Okay, that's what we're saying then. So then he's not Australian.
No, but he's not from New Zealand. He's from Tasmania.
All right, okay. Yeah. All right.
Pulling up a map.
We're going to talk about juniors now.
I digress, sir.
All right, who wants
to
go?
Did they ever update War Room?
They did today.
Let's just get it out of the way. Let's just rip this Band-Aid off. Una 2. Let's just talk about it.
You mean...
You like Mad Dogs?
Oh, my God.
You like Mad Dogs, bro?
You like 8-point Mad Dogs?
Yeah. You like 8-point Mad Dogs?
So, best of the bunch. Are we in agreement there?
Yeah.
You mean Tuna?
Yes.
Tuna. Everybody's calling her Tuna.
Oh, Tuna. That's good. Yeah. That is good.
Yeah, that like is it. Not me. That was just everyone there.
Is it spelled 2-N-A?
I hope so. Yeah. If not, people have been doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think everyone pretty much agrees that Circle was clearly the winner of this bunch. They're all quite good, though. Well, like, none of them are really bad, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. Spoilers, though. Anytime you put Hand of Fate on the card, I think it instantly makes the caster playable.
Probably.
Probably. I mean, Vlad 3. So.
Yeah, I mean.
Right, Nigel?
Yeah.
For sure, all of these are better than the Round of War Machine.
I think I agree with that.
I don't agree with that.
No, Nigel's in love with Malakoff.
I mean, Alara's good, too.
I've not played Tristan. I think Tristan's actually pretty strong. So, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, they're all better than Jace.
Okay.
Okay, we can agree on that.
We can agree on that. So, we're starting with
Keith
Una.
Was talking specifically about Jace.
Somebody want to go through her stats?
Yeah. So, she is the only one of the new ones that's Fury 7 for some godforsaken reason.
Hail Circle Satan.
Despite... basically, her only battle group being extended control area models.
Flight makes right.
oh, my God. That's perfect. She's speed 6, mat 5, rat 6, 15-15, Pathfinder, like all circle casters. Her melee attack is still abysmally garbage, and her gun is still range 10, pow 10. Instead of having rate of fire 3, it has reload 2, so you still get to make 3 shots a turn. Her shot types now are Black Penny, Snipe, and Thunderbolt. So literally gun mages, I guess, from R2.
Yeah, so she's got gun mage birds now?
No.
Yep.
Rune birds?
Yeah. They're not gun mages, but Black 13th.
Yeah.
Right? No. Brutal. Whatever. Anyway, she has a rule called Birds of Prey, which is Griffin, Warbeast, and her battle group gain flank with other Griffins. And then Hawker, which is a new rule, which says while in this model's command range, Warbeasts in its battle group with flight gain sprint, which is currently only Griffins. So,
wait a minute. Do you guys remember when Miami first came out and Colin was doing his own special casters?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Derptastic Caster Palooza or whatever the hell.
Do you remember that first one? The Birdman one?
The Chuck Norris guy, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't this basically him?
This is him. That's 100% true.
I have to go back and listen to Miami.
What was he called? It was such a good name. It was Falconheart something?
Eagle Falconheart or something, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's actually dangerously close. Like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Like, now that I'm thinking about the rules, like...
I think Colin should basically...
He just dialed birds up to, like, a bajillion.
He should call a lawyer, basically.
Yeah.
Which just... The model's really similar, too.
Yeah.
Which just proves us that actually did happen when Colin's like, it's going to be a new rule. And then the guy called, Hungerford, you listen to this. And he put the phone in.
Hungerford, it's your cousin.
Yeah, exactly.
Who? Your cousin. Oh, my God. Yeah. What, didn't you draw some terrible
Yeah, we did a picture of him. Yeah, it's amazing.
So Una obviously is not going to take anything but Griffins probably in her battle group.
Well,
and
a Gorax, because she's not exclusively required.
And Zapdos.
Yeah. No, not Zapdos.
She's taking Zapdos.
She's not taking Zapdos.
A Zapdos that you can't attack for a turn would be awesome.
No, because... Well, her feat says friendly faction models with flight currently in her control area gain plus 2 speed for one turn. Additionally, while in Una's control range, friendly faction light war beasts with flight cannot be targeted by melee.
That
would have
been broke as if.
Yeah.
Not broke, but
it would have made the Skyraptor like playable.
Yeah. Exactly. That would have been like the one chance of like get in there, buddy.
No,
nope, get out of there.
A trap for you to accidentally put a Skyraptor in your list.
Yeah, they were just saving you the $140.
Yeah.
That's nice of them.
So let me get this straight. She can send her Griffins in at plus 2 speed, so she rockets them forward because they're already pretty fast.
They are speed 7.
In a faction with easy access to Hunter's Mark, right?
Yep.
So, like, from downtown. Those things are coming from downtown.
Yeah.
They are going to be mat 10, power 14, right, with primal.
Yes.
Or...
You should not primal them on your feet turn, though, most likely.
It depends what you're coming into.
Well, I mean...
Power 12 weapon masters are fine.
Yeah.
Well, like, the common idea that people had at the weekend was basically just to pop her feet, have the griffins run 18 inches, and just 3 griffins box your caster in like a triangle. And then you just basically go, all right.
You know what's better than that? Send your griffins in, kill 2 heavies, sprint into their caster.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
You okay. go, spoilers, you go further and you do more damage. So, but yeah, that's full on dumb. Because well, those things are like 8 points, right? So,
well, depending on which Griffin you bring. But yes, the one that everybody wants to play and spam are Scarfspell.
Yeah, and they're stealth and have three initials at power 12, 11, 11.
Yeah. Her spell list, which we'll get to, is Hand of Fate, Mirage, Twister, the Hotspot, and Windwall, which is a very solid spell list.
Yep.
All around.
Oh, I forgot she had Mirage.
I can't believe they just gave Hand of Fate to another caster.
Yeah. Well, especially like Hand of Fate and Windwall, which are both Vlad bits. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
what the hell's going on?
Suck it, Nigel.
Yeah, I'm a little confused here.
She also lost her birds, and now her gun is Windstrike, so she's just stealing all the stuff from Kador.
Yeah, her spell list is bonkers. I mean, Windwall is good, but Hand of Fate is off the charts good. It's
Mirage is solid.
Mirage is really good.
And Twister's pretty solid when you have like Sentry Stones, so you can make a, like forest, cloud, wall, kind of. So, yeah, I think spamming is probably not the good way to go. I appreciated the meme that got posted, which was a picture of Una 2, and then an hour later, all of the online stores sold out of like every type of Scarspell, like all the Scarspell Griffins
all
are
just
Griffins sold out just everywhere.
Sold out. I mean, they will be. That's what people will start, is they'll start with spam, and they'll win games, so they'll never be forced to change.
I talked with Tom Guan on the weekend, and we're like, Hand of Fate is too good of a spell to just put on one model. So, like, where should we put it? And then we were both like, let's put it on Wolf Riders. They're probably sweet, because all the Griffins sprint, so when you're in, like, battle group repositions, it's sweet if your entire army repositions, too. And, like, Hand of Fate on cab models.
Hand of Fate's
is really
just
dumb.
On her. She just needs to have Hand of Fate on herself and then move on. And then, otherwise, it's just a dead. It's one of those, like, trap spells where, no, don't take Reeves or something. Don't get cute. Just put Hand of Fate on her. Spam your Griffins.
Seems pretty good on Wolf Riders.
Pretty good on Wolf Riders. They have Assault.
Probably
so they have
is.
They have their Weapon Master, Spear Throw. They have their Charge Attack and their Weapon Master now, right?
They are in melee, yeah.
Yeah. And then you have your Mount Attack, which is POW 14.
It's POW 12.
Mm-hmm. Okay, POW 12.
Checked, but yeah,
you told me POW 14 last night.
Yeah, I brain farted.
But still, that's a lot of output for Hand of Fate. Mm-hmm. So
it is. Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll
it seems
see.
Reasonable.
Problem is, like with the spamming, is you unlike in War Machine, you actually do run into like sort of issues because of Fury or because of Frenzies. But Shrug.
That's why Primal's there. So then you don't care. They're like, oh, whatever. They're just gonna rage anyway. So then you just don't bother reaving, and then
yeah,
they deliver. They blow up like two Colossals because they're totally OP, and then they.
She's going to be strong because she does have, like, range threat for days. Or not range, melee threat for days. Like, she just has a lot of threat. She buffs to it to hit and to damage. She's got a good denial feat because, you know, once you're jammed up, you
yeah,
can only...
Yeah, Saren.
Yeah.
Like yeah, this is another instance of what were they thinking, because it's like, oh, okay, so they felt that Lilith 2 was too good, so they got her out of the game. Cool. Oh, wait, what's this Karislun doing here? Like, oh, they felt Gatsby 2 was too strong to be in the game. They got him out of it. I guess that makes sense. Wait, what the hell is this High Reclaimer doing here? And now it's like, oh, they felt Saren was too strong, so they removed her main shtick. Well, wait, what is this Una doing here?
Yeah. The Una one is much more specific compared to Saren's, but you're not going to take not Griffins because of all
but,
the
But
other
you don't care because they have flank.
Exactly.
If they didn't give Griffins flank, then now you're suddenly like,
You're like, oh, this caster kind of sucks. Actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know.
They also gave her, like, full flank, but then Zadesh got, like, baby flank for babies. Like, Zadesh, you personally can have flank if you want to get in there, buddy.
You get in there, POW 12 Weapon Master, you get him.
And especially, like, because Nick was being trying to be, like, so positive, you know, like, oh, you know, spell is boring, but we're going to have, like, battle group flank. oh, my God.
Yeah. This feat's pretty good, though.
Do you want to just move on to that guy, then?
Yeah, sure.
Boom.
So we already knew his spell list. His feat is his battle group models get +2 mat, +2 strength, and defensive strike, which is a good. It's a good and interesting feat. Like, it's obviously going to be an offensive powerhouse feat for, you know, the turn that you get in there with your war beast. But then it also provides you some defense in that whenever they come in. Because defensive strike is, you know, you get to punch them before they get to punch you, basically, if they end in your melee range. Mm-hmm. And the buff
Unless
retains.
Unless they're Una's Griffin.
Right. And the buff retains, so you're going to be punching them with +2 mat, +2 strength, you know. So that's pretty good. It's not a bad feat. And then he himself has a flank with his battle group, so that makes his flashing blade a little bit neater.
Yeah. It is nice to know that he's kind of a caster that can never get shot like ever.
Oh, also that, yeah, he's got a sack pond for Warbeast, right?
Yeah. With, that's really good. And then you just put like one of the bugs in, and then it's just like every shot goes into an arm 23 heavy. And it's just like, ta-da. Sad face.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, those two.
There is merit for a caster that can't get shot.
But I totally agree. Like, yeah. Once I saw he has sack pond like Warbeast, I was like, oh, and then I saw his feed is not garbage. In fact, his feed is good, I would say.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, even. Yeah, he's fine. Like, you know, like we said, his spell list is not bad. It's just boring. Mm. Yeah. But he can't be killed.
It's even still harder to shoot him because he has Burning Ash.
Right.
I don't think Burning Ash is going to be used that much by him. That's kind of a trap.
I think it could be because Scorn's kind of in the problem right now of like being out-threaded by literally everything,
but
almost.
He's Fury 6, right?
Yeah.
You're going to go empty and...
And not get shot to death because you're just sitting right next to one of your heavies? Probably.
To go empty and put out 3 clouds that really don't cover that much?
9 inches? That covers a lot.
Yeah.
Three clouds is more than plenty. I mean, Lich got by with 3 clouds for a long time.
You can cover part of your army. I'm just saying, like, I don't...
No, I mean, you
I
just
don't
need,
think
like, 2.
I don't think Burning Ash is the point of him, though, is all I'm saying. Like,
yeah, but it allows you to, like, in the few games I played against Scorn of Mark III, like, they just don't have, like, the range prowess, and their stuff doesn't have long enough, like, threat ranges anymore. And so I just get to pick away at them until they put something into my threat range, and then I get to kill it. And so... Now they can just put 2 clouds in front of, like, just like run a, I don't know, some Titan up there and then just plop clouds in front of it. So that way it doesn't get charged.
It'll have tactical
death.
Use. I'm wondering if, like, his feet will be enough for a well-built Scornless to get through Mad Dogs. I'm kind of curious.
Also, Battle Charge Defensive Strike is kind of hilarious. Because you just, like, countercharge a guy. And then, like, if they send a guy into you, like, it protects your countercharging, because usually somebody will, like, run a dirtle to, like, stop you from countercharging, and then you just get a dick punch that guy.
I didn't even think about battle charge synergy with, because that is really good, because you get the mat bonus.
Yeah.
So that is actually really good.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. I think he's good. I think he's actually just good.
So, like, what kind of changes that happen when, like, 2 battle charged casters come into each other? All right, I countercharge your guy.
I don't want to think about
it. All right, I countercharge your guy that just countercharged. Okay, I countercharged.
It's like Bane Knights and Mark 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of depends on who has more models. So basically, Karchev always wins that fight.
All the Mad Dogs.
Like, so there's a big difference between a POW 14 countercharge and a POW 21 countercharge.
This is true.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Oh, doesn't Rage last through the turn?
Or like the Whips?
Yeah.
Whips is turn.
Oh, okay, so POW 19.
Yeah. But
I was hopeful. Of course it doesn't work that way because Scorn. I should have known better.
Well, most buffs like that don't. Yeah. I'm trying to think of sweet things that would Counter-Strike would be like hilarious on.
Does Scorn have any models that knock down?
They've got like Tetsubo on, what's his face?
Tiberian,
I think, has like crit smite. Yeah. They have a lot of like crit smite, like a handful of crit smites. But
yeah, crit chuck on the Arcanon, right?
Yeah, crit pitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
What about just getting smashed by Mullet Karn? Like getting countercharged and then punched. Just POW 15 Weapon Master.
Yeah, it's legit. I mean, all of it, like, Defensive Strike is just good.
Yeah, it's good.
Especially,
it's good. That's why I think
especially when
good.
Everything's mat 8 or 9.
Right.
Defensive Strike's only once per turn, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be...
But you
he would be broken.
But you get to choose when you use it.
Right.
So if they throw a bunch of... If they run a bunch of infantry into you, you can just be like, okay, you know. And then if they come in with their heavy, then you're like, now is the time.
Yep. Ta-da! Oh, hope you didn't lose your spirit, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Oh, the Mammoth also has I think it has like crit pitch or something. I remember that.
It does.
Yeah.
So Sadesh, I mean, obviously we're calling Una an A.
We don't grade casters.
Oh,
what cast do you think this
dude,
is?
Hold on. That's actually, the Mammoth is actually kind of sick because he gives, defensive strike, and the Mammoth also has counter blast.
Yeah.
So you get to like defensive strike twice in a turn, which is actually kind of gross, but.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're both. I think Una is obviously really freaking good. I think Zadesh is just good. Like, he's a good caster.
I think he's solid.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good spell list. I guess we could go through the spell list. We went through it last week.
I mean, everybody has War Room.
Okay.
Whatever. He's got 4 spells. Who cares? What about
nailed it?
What about the Legion gal? Legion
Lana.
Yeah.
I think she's good too.
Probably.
Yep.
Very dumb.
That's what JVM actually played in finals, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That JVM.
Oh, yeah.
That caught up.
Just for our refresher, because we haven't... I mean, War Room happened today. She's Speed 7, Mat 7, 15-15, Def and Arm, Fury 6, POW 12 Melee. She still has Chain Strike from her earlier thing, and she has crit smite on her punches. She's got dodge and overtake and field marshal overtake, which is real good.
Yep.
Yeah, field marshal overtake is very strong.
Yeah. And then her spell list is just phenomenal. Admonition, Fury, Gallows, and Iron Flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So the poopiest...
Iron Flesh is plus two arm now on warrior models.
Yeah, no blast damage.
Iron Flesh is pretty damn annoying on a Hellmouth.
That is correct.
Oh my god.
Wow. That's well on.
I can't wait until that model gets destroyed.
Me. Also, is Gallows plus Hellmouth good? Pretty sure it is.
Yeah, probably.
Well, the tentacle pulls it to the Hellmouth, so that at that point it's engaged.
No, you gallows it into range of the tentacle.
In that case, your caster is like literally in the middle of the table.
They have arc nodes, bro.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like,
from my experience, Gallows is a very corner case spell.
It makes your opponent have to play differently. Instead of a 12-inch bubble around the Hellmouth, they now have to respect like a 13 or 14-inch bubble around the Hellmouth.
Or a 15? I mean, it doesn't cost them a lot to go for it.
12 plus 1d6-inch bubble.
Right.
Fair enough.
Chad, I like where your head's at.
Yeah. Her feat is everything gains, all friendly faction models gain plus 3 defense and dodge, which is
almost exactly Mordekaiser's, which is a very good feat.
Yeah. Probably
better in Legion because angels.
It's probably just better because dodging is
significantly better
than
Poltergeist. Yeah.
It's less easy to, it's harder to mitigate.
Well, I mean, in one of the options, you get to move your model however you want, and Poltergeist is just, you push your enemy's models away so they're further out of your threat range.
Although, also, some models can't be pushed. They can always charge in a way that prevents them from being pushed.
I'm so excited to have to deal with Def 17 Angels again, guys. I just want you all to know that.
Well, if it's Fury, it'd only be Def 16.
Good.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Just trying to help.
Also, oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, she seems very good.
Her one, thing that she's missing is a Def Fixer, but Legion's got like the Black Frost Shard and the Blightbringer, so
I mean, did you see JVM was playing Nerfs with her? And I'm like thinking to myself, yeah, that makes total sense.
Also Seraphs.
Yeah.
Have Fury. Flare now. But yeah, Nerfs. Yeah.
Nerfs with Fury.
Yep.
Seems good.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was why I was playing them with the Lilith one. Was
Yeah, I thought of you when I saw the list.
Yeah. They're really good when they're PAL 19. Yeah.
And cheap, right? They're super cheap, so
yeah. Although he's kind of making a waste. They already have overtake, so he's losing that synergy.
I mean, so do angels, so...
Yeah. Ah, yeah.
It's okay.
Actually, that field marshal is worthless. All the models you're going to play with already have overtake anyway, which is Seraphs and Nerfs and angels.
Maybe we'll see... I was thinking about it. There's a lot of options for Iron Flesh. Striders. Like, there's a lot of really annoying stealth models that you can put Iron Flesh on that suddenly become... more annoying to deal with.
Sure. There's a lot less stealth models than...
Strider Blightblades, Hex Hunters, right? Hex Hunters aren't stealth anymore?
Correct.
Oh, well, my bad.
Yeah. Yeah, just Striders, basically.
Why do you want Iron Flesh on them?
Because they're immune to blast damage.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's just a lot harder to deal with them.
It's probably good on something like Raptors, just Def 14, Arm 17, Cav models.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not... Yeah, you got her, Aurora.
Nailed it.
Doesn't seem that exciting.
Well, I don't think you build lists for her for Iron Flesh. I mean, it's
right.
It's clearly.
I don't know.
Swordsman actually kind of interesting.
Wait, is Fury?
Fury
is
on Swordsman.
Fury plus 3 to melee damage rolls, or is it strength?
Melee damage rolls. I think I will look though.
It's melee damage, so it works on cavalry.
Damn it.
I don't know. It seems like she just puts Iron Flesh on herself, and then Spiny Growth maybe, and then she's armor. She's 19. Def 15, armor 19 with dodge.
Seems good.
Def 18 on the field. On the turn.
Also, I can't think of a possible better target for Iron Flesh than, like you said, the Hellmouth. That seems like the best possible target for it. So.
Yeah. Seems really frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, they're hard enough to kill it.
Armor 23.5 is a lot.
Ugh, God.
Hey, it could be 25.5 if you shoot it with a Blightbringer.
So she seems good. She seems very good, I would say. Then let's move on. Does anyone disagree, I guess? Like, JVM clearly thought she was good enough and got to the end of the LCQ, or the Invitational.
I mean, to be fair, he was list-locked because he wasn't playing her, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, he was list-locked into playing her, and he absolutely did not want to play her into Mad Dogs.
So you hear that here. JVM thinks she's hot garbage into Mad Dogs, which is all War Machine is right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like she has tools, though, for Mad Dogs? Like, a turn of... Well, I guess a turn of defense is just straight countered by Karchev's feet.
Fact. And it's mostly... you don't need like plus three, like furying one dude doesn't help you kill like more mad dogs because you need to be able to like somehow sidestep from one mad dog to another. Like, there's just too many mad dogs.
Overtake, bro.
Oh, that's one.
I don't think the plan to fight the mad dogs with heavies works hardly at all.
Fact,
because there's just more mad dogs.
It'd be sweet to fight
whatever you brought. We already talked about Horgul earlier a little bit, but just to go over him again, he's fairly standard troll stats. Def 14, arm 17, mat 7, speed 5, which is the same as he was in his non whatever form. His weapons got changed from before they were like a flaming sword and like a anvil or like a forge hammer or something like that.
Aren't they still?
Now they are just called forge weapons. They're both the exact same. They have the exact same pow and like everything. They both cause fire to whatever he hits with them, and he has a chain attack that I talked about, chain attack ignition, which if he hits the same target with both of his initials, then it's you basically blow up everything within 2 inches of it with a pow 12 fire roll. He retained burnt meat, which lets his war beasts charge for free if the model they're charging is on fire. And he has immunity. He gives a field marshal immunity to fire. I mean, he also still has immunity to fire. So that's a good field marshal.
Yeah, situationally, it's just game winning, right?
Right, right. Not as many situations nowadays, I don't think. Right, but
well, there's less Legion shooting running around.
Like, yeah,
you don't see the. You know, three Ravagor lists anymore.
Yeah, but there's still a decent amount of fire-based type shooting out there. So I mean, I wouldn't turn that down.
I still see a lot of Reckoners.
Yeah,
so.
And it's just nice to, like, there were a couple turns where I just was like, I don't even need to combat ward because my entire army is almost already immune to fire. So you know, just by virtue of it being, or I want them to be on fire like fire eaters. So yeah, then his spell list he's got a new spell. I can't remember the name of it, but it might not be new. But
Firestarter?
It's a range. It's just basically a nuke.
That is new.
It's range 10, pow 12. It's an AoE 4, costs 3, and it's just whatever it hits is lit on fire, basically. So it's just pretty standard nuke. It's just another way for him to light stuff on fire. You can take a rune bearer, and the rune bearer can cast it because of spell slave or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
So that's sweet. I was using my rune bearer to light my fire eaters on fire, which is, you know, fun. Then he's got solid ground, which is awesome in trolls. You know, we've been wanting it forever, basically. So that's sweet. Then he's got inviolable resolve, which is the first time trolls have ever seen an armor buff. So that's cool. And his fourth spell is Firestarter. Yeah. Which is a model in his battle group gains continuous effect fire on all of their attacks. So. So I was just putting that on my bombers to make it so that their bombs would cause fire. It's kind of a nice synergy with his feet too, because you can have whatever war beast charge in, and then you know if you just boost to hit their first attack roll, and then all of their other everything else becomes boosted, you know, for the rest of the as long as you hit with that first attack. And then his feet is all models in his control radius gain boosted attack and damage rolls when attacking a model that is on fire in his control radius. A model in his control radius that is suffering the fire continuous effect. And at first I thought that was just battle group only, but it's like, oh no, that like it affects everything. As long as they're shooting at something or punching something that's on fire, you get boosted everything. So I'm like, is there any way that I can really super duper abuse that? The worst thing I can think of is if they are facing their butt towards you. And you light them on fire, then you can get your highwaymen with 4 dice. And your highwaymen are within 8 inches of Braylon. Then your highwaymen can get 4 dice to hit, 4 dice damage per shot,
that's
pretty sweet. But I think the most egregious thing is probably the war wagon, because you can boost to hit its pounder, pounder shot, and then it boosts its damage roll and everything, which is like it's never had a way to boost either before.
Thumper Cruiser probably decent, right?
Yeah, Thumper Cruiser probably pretty decent. It's a decent assassination. The only problem is just that you have to be. It's such a predictable threat,
sure.
Because you have to be within his control radius and on fire, and so that's like very conditional. Like those things are very conditional.
Mm.
But in terms of like just thinking of that feat as a way of just cracking like armor on a couple of pieces, like that's been very good. I think that will be very good. That was very good for me anyway.
My God.
What about burrowers?
Yeah, I thought about them. I think it could be really good on burrowers. I think the problem is just the, like range. Their guns are range 4, and there's no, and you wouldn't be able to like the big thing that made Grimm's shooting with burrowers awesome was snipe.
Oh so, yeah, fair enough.
with range four, like they would do tremendous damage to anything.
Did you charge with them?
Well, they don't have point blank anymore, so you could charge with their pickaxe, their POW 8 pickaxe.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't. Again, it's my details that I've missed.
But I mean, like, it's just like I'm imagining, like, what situation can I get like all 10 burrowers around something that I want to shoot at? And I'm like, well, maybe I could actually burrow with them, and then I just use that as kind of like a ticking clock. You know, if they just keep moving the brewing marker towards their caster or towards their colossal or whatever, and it's just like, yeah. And then you wait until the turn that they can pop up, and then it's like, sweet, light it on fire, pop the feet, like, go, 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 10 boosted POW 14s, like, psh, psh, psh. Except they made the burrowing order so crappy. It's like that clock takes literally forever. Like, by the time the clock dings, like, you've already lost the game.
It's like six rounds.
Yeah, and they reduced it to you have to pop up completely within 4 inches or whatever of the burrowing marker. So it's like you can't even get, like, the back burrower is, like, basically... The front burrowers have to be, like, base-to-base with the things that the back burrowers would have to shoot at. Like, it's stupid. So, no, I don't think burrowers would work, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, maybe a min unit and then not burrowing them, because I think that's just always the worst choice. Like, and just using them as a sort of 10-inch threat thing, but yeah.
I mean, you know, Bushwhackers, each two-man CRA is a boosted POW 12.
Yeah, and I, that's what bad, I played but... Bushwhackers with him. Just because I was trying to, like, it's tough because, like, I wanted to play a ton of War Beasts to really take advantage of his feet. But then it's, like, also at the same time, like, you really want to take advantage of solid ground, and that requires you to take a lot of infantry. And he doesn't really do anything for infantry otherwise.
Other than his feet.
It's his feet, yeah. But, like, a lot of times, you know, boosting damage rolls where it's just like they could have just charged, you know, in a lot of ways, like for troll infantry anyway. Like, the really exciting thing is boosting guns, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think like the artillery pieces are probably, I don't know what the new one does.
Yeah, I think Highwaymen and Bushwhackers both have, like, you could make an argument for both. I tried out Bushwhackers and thought it was good. I think Highwaymen could also be really good if you can somehow manufacture a back arc. That's like
the apocalypse.
That's so money.
I mean, charges end up manufacturing that often.
Yeah.
Like, well, sluggers.
Oh.
No, I actually thought about sluggers. Yeah, that was something I thought about in the.
Is it Rad 5 D3 POW 13s?
Yeah, yeah.
Times 5 dudes.
When if they have a colossal, like, and you manage to get your sluggers there without dying, which solid ground helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the five sluggers could theoretically just, like, straight up kill a colossal. That's pretty sweet. Like, if you think, like, I think sluggers might be decent with him.
Yeah.
Just because you can, like, if you could pepper, like, fire on, like, three or four. Like, if they have four heavies, you know, or something, like, three or four heavies, your bomber could probably light one of them on fire. He could probably light one of them on fire. And then if he wants to, like, I don't know. If you could somehow manage, and you've got fire eaters, too. So they're very good at lighting stuff on fire, right. You know.
Oh, I just thought about it. I was like, holy, these sluggers might have a place.
Yep, yep.
And you could kind of deliver them if you put, like, IR on them and then switch it over to, like, the Mountain King when he's going to actually be in threat range or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Plus solid ground also, like, just helps them out a little bit. Makes them immune to blast damage and makes them... gives them, like, old Mark II tough.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if they're, like, 12, 19, that's actually, like, annoying.
Yeah, sluggers might be good. They might, especially if they have something big for you to light on fire and just for them to just gun down. Because it's 5d3 boosted to hit, boosted damage.
Take that, Mad Dogs.
POW 13s. But, like, how do you light 10 Mad Dogs on fire?
They're going to be in a line. Fire Eagles will get them all. Just, it'll work.
Actually might work.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I was noticing, too, is I kept thinking about it in terms of...
all the men.
I'll stop talking soon, guys, I swear.
You're fine.
Yeah, carry on. Josh is here. Let it go.
get it in.
Dude, we're talking about sluggers.
I kept thinking about the game in terms of, you know, okay, well, on his feet turn, I'm going to have to choose what I want to kill, and I'm going to have to figure out a way to light that thing on fire, and then it'll go from there. But then I'm playing a game, you know, with fire eaters and with the bomber with fire starter and everything like that. And it's like, fire doesn't necessarily go away.
Right.
So, like, if you can, you know, get fire on, like, a good portion of their army, like, on the first, you know, first or second turn, and then you save your feet for the third turn, like, and then you can still get fire on stuff that turn.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't automatically go away. Like, so you can actually kind of you can kind of turn the oven on for his feet, you know, like kind of like get the oven going, like get it up to
stoke the flames.
Yeah. So just like wait for the temperature to basically hit the right point before you really put that chicken in.
That's his feet should be called put the chicken in.
Put the turkey in. Yeah.
Put the turkey in.
So I don't know. That's an interesting thought that I had. Like, again, I mean, maybe he's less boring than I don't know. I feel like he's boring for some reason just because it's like, okay, speed 5, no gun.
There's nothing tricksy.
Yeah. Well, the trickiest thing that he does is chain attacking his own dude.
Right.
His own dudes, which is like, that's, I hope they don't change that because it is really sweet on the Mountain King.
I think that that one's fine. Like, I 100% understand them getting rid of Doom Shapers and be like, like, yeah. All the...
Well, shut up. I don't.
That's pretty egregious. But him chain attacking his own dude, that's fine.
I don't know if the Mountain King is mandatory with him, but I just was like, armor 23 Mountain King all the time, plus whelps, plus Mountain Kings are sweet now, and, like, Deafen was a big deal in my game for both the -2 defense on, like, the heavies that I was shooting at and the not giving orders. And, like, the Mountain King, like, he just never touched it all game because he's just like, this is a waste of time, you know? And so it's like, that was sweet, too. And then Rage ended up being sweet. And then, like,
there's actually a lot of cool things. That weird, that silencing people tech is actually pretty hacked against, like, even E-Risk, too. I mean, yeah. It's, like, risky because you could just kill the Iron Fang Pikeman. But if you don't...
But if he makes the tough check.
If he makes the tough check, then, yeah. Because you don't have to actually penetrate his armor, right? You just have to hit him?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So, was the PAL 14 or
16?
Oh, yeah, you're gonna force a tough check, then never mind.
Yeah, but I mean, if he makes, that's what I was saying. But if he makes a tough check,
then that unit's just toast. It's like, oop.
Then they go to, they don't get to, well, they could always kill him with something else.
Yeah.
And then field promote.
Yeah.
Because it would just be that model can't give or receive orders.
Oh. Yeah. If they field promote, can they actually give an order that turn?
Yes.
Okay. So that's okay. That's cool.
I think so. I might not. Yeah. Unless something changed. But yeah. So there's ways around it, obviously. But
okay.
But in the game where you couldn't attack your own models, that'd be hacks.
Mountain King is just really good now. And then it's got bulldoze, which makes it hard to pin down. And then when you can just automatically clear stuff, like, because I think that it's going to happen, like it happened in my game. It happened in my very first game.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen pretty frequently that people are going to be like, I can't deal with this Armor 23 Mountain King. Like, I have to pin it down with all my infantry and then get my multiple heavies in position to get on it. And then if they try and do that, like, you're just going to be like, you know.
Real quick, does it heal whelps during its activation?
No, it's a spawn a weapon base to base with
them. No, but like when it eats them, that's during its activation, right?
Yeah, all warbeasts have Yeah.
Is his chain attack only enemy models that get lit on fire? Or is there some like...
No, it's all models.
That's small Scornergy, but still really good.
It's not that much of a Scornergy because you can have the whelps run away.
Oh, sure.
Like... And then,
well, then also they're immune to blast damage because it's solid ground, so they don't take POW 12.
It's not blast damage.
It's like combustion. It's just they all take POW 12s.
Really?
It's not blast damage. Wow. It is sweet, though, because it can light the Fire Eaters on fire, too, if they're near. Because I had a Fire Eater that was just chilling. Like, he just never managed to kill. And it had full HP, and it wasn't on fire. And when I did my chain attack, then it was like, kill every other model, also light this Fire Eater on fire. Like, life was sweet. Yeah. You know, and that Fire Eater was just like,
flame
sweet.
On.
Like, there were like five, there were like four guys surrounding him. Like, because his strategy was to stop me. Because he realized I had bulldoze or that I could possibly like trample over him to get to his zone. But he was like, if I box this Fire Eater in, then he can't like bulldoze his own models and he can't trample over his medium base, you know? So that was kind of cute. But like then like in the process of clearing them all out with the chain attack, just like lighting the Fire Eater on fire was just like, bonus! You know, so then he got to do his boosted attacks on whatever. Oh, yeah. I freaking love Fire Eaters.
It's weird.
I so wish
that
they were FA3.
It's so...
Or 4 or 5.
Or you. Or why Infinity. Not? Everything. Yeah. I mean, Mad Dogs are. Like, yeah. Might as well. Yeah. Everything might as well
be.
I mean,
just wait for the command book. You're going to have a theme force that's going to be FAU Fire Eaters.
God, I hope so. I hope it's with Horgel.
And then it'll get nerfed in 6 months, so you're going to like buy 10 and then explode.
You get what you deserve, Nigel.
All right, I'm done talking. Yeah. We can actually.
I get what I deserved. I didn't win War Machine Weekend.
You bought 10 Mandel.
Yeah, that's not. You don't deserve something just for buying things.
You knew have to this actually, was coming.
You have to be. I haven't even used more than 5 yet in a game.
You've used 5?
I've definitely used 5.
Okay.
In a lot of games. But I've only used 5. I was working up
good.
To 10.
Good. Yeah.
Now you've stopped.
Now the dream's over.
It's like, stop the presses. Mad Ducks.
Also, everybody's like solutions for them is miserable.
It's like it's the same as Meat Mountain. It's like it just doesn't. People don't know.
Mm.
Like I swear to God, when I was playing Meat Mountain like 2 or 3 years ago, or whatever, and it was really big, people would just be like, "I don't know, that list doesn't seem good." I would just beat it with this, and I'm like, I crushed that list.
Mm-hmm.
Like that does not beat me.
Yeah,
and they just didn't believe it until it happened. It's the same with Mad Dogs. People are just like, "Oh, I would just beat it with this," and it's like, I don't think you do.
Yeah, yeah. I had to try to go in the tank and think about what I would do as a Kador player. And I feel like Eorusk 2 would be a natural solution against it, but he beat an Eorusk 2 player on the way to it, so it's,
yeah,
like, it's clearly more complicated.
We watched that game, and he was the Eorusk 2 player at the WTC playing against Bubba's, and he lost.
Is it?
Okay.
So it's clearly not Because that's exactly what I thought, too. It's like, well, Iris 2 seems like he'll just destroy this list.
Yeah, because they don't go anywhere.
And Chandler had High Reclaimer with both units of Cav and Knight's Exemplar, and he was doing okay on attrition, but he lost badly on Scenario.
Yeah.
Is the answer play minions? Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't think it is.
Or Una.
Right, just
I don't
go
think
kill.
Tuna can even do it.
Big Tuna.
What if she just went and killed Karchev? Just like run four Griffins into Karchev, pop her feet.
That might work.
Yeah, box him in, then he's just done.
I think solution is play Ron and just kill Karcha.
I do think Ron is like, that seems pretty automatic. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just so weird.
Wait, because when they blow up, it's blast damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when they...
It is blast when they blow up.
Ron, get him again. It's like, oh, they'll just run and kill my battle mate. Wait, no. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Also, that never works.
It never works the way you want it to.
No. You're like... One time explode, blow up. Just like dud. You're like, oh.
It happened like 3 times in the last game I watched Nigel play.
But when you have like 14 mad dogs, you get like
you
7 chances.
You can't give them all focus.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
And actually, in a lot of games, Karchev doesn't even want to give them focus. He just wants to be unkillable.
Right.
Because you will eventually win the game as long as Karchev doesn't die.
So I should build this.
No reason not to camp 6.
For the... WITC, I should just, like, build a Ron list to take down Karchev.
You should, but...
The man in the machine.
I think it's very likely that Mad Dogs will change. And
I don't. They'll get better.
I actually think... and this isn't even me being a faction group. I think they should change. I definitely think the Mad Dogs should change in some way. But I think they should go to 7 points. Everybody else wants them to go to... Or sorry, they should go to 8.
Like,
they should go to 8. There are people who want them to be 9, and they're just not worth more than a Berserker. They're just 100%.
Yeah, that's what I said, 8.
Yeah. I think 8's fine. I also think that FA3 on models under 10 is fine. The one thing that I'd like to see more of, though, one of the things that sort of sucked about watching the games was that a lot of those solos that used to be very critical, like Iris's, have gone away, and which has allowed you to take these really dumb lists that don't, you know, if Iris was on the board, that's a miserable matchup. Like, she's a 7-point model. She costs exactly the same as a Mad Dog, which is idiotic.
Infuriating.
But she could potentially toilet bowl the game just by herself. And there's just you can't afford to take her anymore. They've priced her out of the game.
Yeah,
and it's changed like the way people build lists. Like you can just do dumb stuff now.
I was actually talking to Colin about this on the way back because I think I just came to the conclusion where I was like, and I'm not saying Mark III is bad and that I'm you know whatever, but like I think I just preferred Mark II in a lot of ways, and one of them is just like the kinds of lists that I liked to play, where it was But this is what they've kind of pushed trolls towards with no fury mitigation, like no like actual like real fury mitigation. It's like I want to take just my minimum sort of amount that I need to fuel my caster, and then I want to take a bunch of sweet solos and a bunch of sweet like units and a bunch of sweet support, and I can't do that anymore because you're forced to take twice as much battle group as you want.
Yep.
You know?
Well, not only that, but the solos are more expensive.
They're more expensive.
And troops went, you know, so it's like troops are cheaper, solos are more expensive, and then you have to take twice as much battle group. So solos just got totally chased out.
Yeah,
it's very miserable taking them. Like it didn't take long for, you know, Kel Balok and Alton Ashley are great, but 10 points for two guys, and then you just eventually get that beaten out of you. It's just not, they don't do enough work to make them mainstays.
Which is crazy, because that's why they used to be so good.
Yeah.
Like, you used to look at Kel Balok in Mark II, and it's just like, wow, this guy basically, like, never kills less than 3 points.
Yeah.
You know, ever. And so...
How many points does it... never mind.
He's like 5 now.
They're both 5.
Yeah.
So...
And he used to cost 2.
I wish they wrote just like they could roll back to the Mark II points. Just I would just take it across the board. And then also the battle group thing. Just make the battle groups. Just like roll the point system back to Mark II, basically, and I'd be happy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about how we want a more granularity in point cost of things, and then they just went like full idiot with it.
Well, I wouldn't say full idiot, but they just missed. They missed on Mad Dogs. They missed on a lot of solos. I think the average cost for a solo should be 3 points.
They also missed on the granularity bit. They whiffed hard on it, like especially where
that's
solos are concerned. But also they come on the other end, the behemoth. Like we were actually talking about on the Kador Facebook threads, that essentially the behemoth is 28 points. Like that's just the way we sort of interpret him. Because
you just take him instead of taking...
Yeah.
Like we said last week, you're like, I could take 2 destroyers.
Yeah.
Or I could take a strictly better behemoth for less points.
And then just be short points. Right. I'll be short 3 or 4 points, depending on the caster.
Right.
And that's 100%. So just make him 28 points then and give him like dual attack or something.
Dual attack.
28 points where he's like, I mean,
he should at least have the old cortex, subcortex rule back, right? Where he can run and shoot. And,
exactly.
Or whatever, trample and shoot.
But I mean, dual attacks, that's just what the rule is, basically. There's a long way to say dual attack. So just give him that and then make him charge him 4 more points. That way you could
Vlad could just take Behemoth and call it a day, rather than just be 3 points or 4 points short. But that's the granularity thing, is like, because they shove that second war, you know, Warjack down your throat, you're like, it just, it sucks. There's no good way around it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it sucks that you have to spend a whole 3 points out of your possible army for another Mad Dog. Like, that's rough.
No, that actually is rough, because one Mad Dog is worthless. Like, one Mad Dog is strictly bad.
That's true.
It's a waste of
you
points.
Need, like,
I would rather be 3 points short than waste and get a solo, like,
well,
Battling
Corvo.
Well,
get the Shade Guard guy, then.
That's 11 not, points,
he's 11
and he's
points.
Not 11 points. He's strictly bad, because he's 11 points.
He's 11 points.
He's 1 point less than a Juggernaut, and he's terrible. So,
how is he 11 points?
That,
the Mad
that guy
Dog is,
should actually be like 7.
How is the Mad Dog 7 points and that guy 11 points? They're on the same.
Remember when I said they went full idiot with him?
Yeah.
And you're like, no, hold on.
I still wouldn't say that they went full
idiot. Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be.
But there's like how many.
Well, that's idiotic.
Well, there's how many hundreds of models in this game, and there's going to be some hits and some misses.
For sure.
Right. And I don't think that anything that we've talked about is irreversible or unchangeable. Like, and, you know, they can. Or unfixable, I should say. So, like, I'm not dooming and glooming. I don't want that to...
No, I know. But it's a frustration of the game currently. It's just sort of... The game's great. Like, I was just telling Colin today, like, because he was sort of crumb-bumming a little bit. And I was like, Mark II is, like, the greatest it's been. Like, for rules-wise, like, streamlined... Mark III is, like, the greatest. If you just took the core rules, it's the best. But then it's just the other stuff that makes it...
Which is stuff that they can fix. I'm trying to just do a little thought exercise here. If we went to 100 points, would lists just grow in the same way that they have been, or would it just be more spam?
I think it'd be more spam.
Or would you use those extra 15 points to fill in with solos or whatever?
I think me and you would use those extra 15 points to fill in, and we would basically be making Mark II lists.
Yeah.
But I think the smart money is actually just taking more Mad Dogs.
I mean, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you warm
Mad Dogs?
Well, it's a matter of efficiency. Yeah. It's a matter of points efficiency at that point. But I wonder if there's any possible way they can do it, like, you know... I don't know what they call it, but maybe there's like 10 points that you can only spend on solos.
I mean, they could fix it if they just made everything max FA3.
Jim's suggestion was really good, which was for Steamroller, you have like hard field allowance caps across like the entire. Yeah,
I'm not sure that would be bad actually.
No, it's bad for sales.
It is bad for sales.
So I mean, and they'll
never do
it.
Never going to happen.
It is in one way in that like. Jim's argument when we were eating barbecue, sweet, delicious barbecue, was capping it at 3 is bad for sales, but if you're not driving players away from the game by doing it, in terms of, like, it's easier to balance the game and you don't have 20 Mad Dogs running around.
And then you don't have people like Colin who get frustrated and leave.
And just quit.
Yeah.
And then
also, there are some sales that you'll pick up. If you make all...
Correct.
If every Juggernaut, every Marauder, every Decimator was FA3 instead of FAU... There would be people who bought 3 of them instead of 1 because they're like, I want to have field allowance of this.
It wouldn't even make stop spam. You could still take 3 Mad Dogs, 3 Berserkers, 3 Marauders, and 3 Juggernauts in like a list, basically.
Right.
And, you know, so you're still spamming. It's just at least it's not looking at the same stupid model.
The thing is, it might not be as egregious because Jim's argument was if they pick a model and it's 2 point undercosted and you get to take 3 of them, you're 6 points ahead.
Yeah.
But if you get to take 10...
You're 20 points
ahead, which is huge. And that's, I think, the current problem. It makes balancing the game easier. They can be a little sort of lazier about it because it's like, we messed
just
up on
looser,
that.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, right. So
they can play fast and loose with their rules a little bit more because they don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So.
Yeah, 6 points ahead is nothing. High Reclaimer has 7 too many Warjack points.
What? What are you talking about?
He has 32 Warjack points.
Yeah, that's
average.
He's got 32?
He does.
That is, what on earth?
That is the most idiotic thing I've ever...
Remember when I said they messed up the...
Never mind. Crump was right.
I did not know that. That's insane.
You're arguing that your face was...
My highest caster is 30.
Chad's reaction... lined up perfectly, like soundtrack wise, to my brain exploding. Like, I was just doing the same exact. He's like, "What?" And that's what my brain was literally doing inside my head.
Just a little cartoon. Because
it was like a lawn dart that sunk in real quick. And like, you said it, and it was like, thunk. And I had to think about it. And then Chad was like, "What?" And I was like, right when my brain lit up with just like in furious rage.
Guys,
I did not know that. That is insane.
Guys,
that is
so stupid.
He's only focus 5.
Oh, Jesus. So more Warjacks is clearly bad for him.
Right, you're right. I guess we should make Madrak 32 points.
Yeah, Epic Gatsby has 26.
Yeah. Yeah. My highest are 30. My highest two casters have 30. Almost everything else is like 28
Harvey
or 27.
Harvey Klammer's kind of a bad caster. So
okay. All right. We're ending it. We're done.
Podcasting forever.
That's it. Thanks for listening to episode 288 of Muse on Minis. It was killed this week by John, but my name is Chad.
This has been John.
Nigel.
And Keith.
All right, we'll be back next week, guys. More of that sweet stuff. I don't know, whatever. This is terrible. I'm turning this off.
Actually know we were recording.
Well, we are now recording.
Okay.
Let's retry Keith.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know if we were. Did you text him?
Well, yeah. I did text him. This is all getting cut out anyway.
Yeah.
But you guys started talking about, like, stuff that we were.
Oh.
You know, so I started the recording.
Gotcha.
And then Crump Potty Mouth McGee.
Hey, look.
Yeah, you should really point fingers.
Fine. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I know, that's why I was 100% what I was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't look at me.
Exactly.
I was, yeah. I was the engineer on the Hippica train.
Can that be?
Choot, choot.
Yep.
Boop.
One day that hero or that character will come out.
What character?
Sombra for Overwatch, the new character.
She's like the spy from TF2, from what I understand.
Okay.
She can go stealthy, and she can disable turrets and stuff. And
hack health packs.
He's calling us.
I feel privileged.
Now we can officially start recording.
Tina, calm down.
Oh. Howdy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Keith.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Let's get you situated so you can hear everybody properly.
Oh, yeah, I forget that.
Okay.
Right on the parafilm paper. Just get in there. Yeah, parchment paper. Savior.
Alrighty.
We are recording.
Keith?
Keith, are you caught up on Westworld?
I've not seen yesterday's episode.
Oh.
Me either, buddy.
Where are your priorities?
Me three there.
Nice.
Chad's just waiting for like that eighth episode to come out, and then he's gonna be in.
It's gonna be
take it to Pound Town.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
The 1 month subscription to HBO.
Yeah. It was another episode that was just like chock full of stuff happening and building. And like stuff's starting to pay off a little bit now. So
last week I talked about how oftentimes I'll pause it at halfway through the episode. I'll like pause it thinking it's almost over, and I'll see that I'm only halfway in. It's like, yeah, more 30 more minutes. Awesome. I think I did that like four times. It's like, there's just too much stuff happening. It's got to be almost over. And then it was like, I've only advanced 15 minutes. Oh, so good. Yeah.
Yep. That was my experience. Actually, I started watching it last night when I got home, and I fell asleep. I got up this morning. I watched it when I came to work.
Yep.
Because priorities.
Our pre-rambles for the last like 3 weeks, by the way, have just been like, Westworld's awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty good.
Yep.
It's pretty awesome. We saw Doctor Strange, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
That was a huge mistake, by the way.
No, that was perfect.
John's like 11 o'clock or like 11:15 showing of Doctor Strange when the store opens at 8 a.m. the following day. It's just like, let's go. Chris and I are like, oh, we should probably stay and set up the booth. John's like, I'm your boss. We're going to Doctor Strange.
Just an aside, Benedict Cumberbatch related. Last night he hosted, or Saturday he hosted SNL.
Yeah.
And on the news thing, the church lady came on. It was Dana Carvey. And she was basically talking about like the presidential election. And they asked her all these questions, you know. And they're like, you're like, you seem pretty down on the whole thing process, church lady. Is there anything you do like? And she's like, Westworld.
Amazing.
Yep.
Dana Carvey's still doing SNL?
Yeah, it was, well, just like that random bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen him in anything in, like, forever that I can remember.
That stupid turtle movie where he was, like, a man at master disguise.
Oh, my God.
He did, like, a series of them. Yeah.
That was, like, 10 years ago.
That was the last thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a terrible way to go out.
I don't think he minded.
Yeah.
Went and cried in his huge pile of money.
Yeah.
There are always people like show pictures of like Matt LeBlanc. Like, when it hasn't been your week, your month, or even your year, because he just looks like a disaster now. And it's just like, who cares? He literally just rolls in money for like, yeah.
All the friends I need are money.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, Nigel, I think we have an opportunity. People ask me what we're going to do with all the tokens that were turned in for the token trade-in.
Yep.
And I told him we were going to get a kiddie pool and fill it with tokens. I think it might have been Crump's idea.
Hmm. Yeah. I was thinking John being like, oh, yeah, everyone's tokens, and just bathing in it.
But I'm definitely going to do it in, like, Speedos.
But but you'd be bathing yourself in inferior quality tokens, right?
Some of them are Muse tokens.
Nice. The old wood ones.
Yeah.
But also, like, if cell phones are supposed to be, like, bacterially, like, the worst thing possible, I'm not jumping in a vat of other people's tokens. Like,
yeah, no, that's probably
true. I heard
it's
money, actually. But yeah.
Money, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably tokens, actually.
It's probably actually tokens.
Yeah. Actually, that we actually had that come up, too, because we kept telling people as they came up to the booth, like, oh, try to scratch it. They would be like, oh, I'm going to try and bite it. And I'm like, whoa, hold on.
Actually, like, I planted that bug.
Did you?
I was like, yeah, because you were, like, selling them. And I'm like, they're as good as gold. And I went to, like, buy one and bit it with my tooth and just, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yep.
That seems like a good way to, like,
I mean, I didn't do it.
Right.
Yeah. Chris and I were going to, one of the ideas we had for all the tokens was Chris and I, who were working the booth, were going to take them all and put them underneath John's fitted sheet, like above his mattress before he went to bed one night. So he just gets in.
Yeah.
He's just like, something's wrong here.
Just sprinkle them all around the foot of his bed, like, entirely. So no matter where he steps, he's just like,
oh. Oh, God, that would have been, like, after he goes to bed, just Legos in the morning.
You guys are not nice. Jeez Louise.
If he has a ceiling fan, just coat the top of the blades of ceiling fan tokens.
Oh, my.
When he turns them on, he gets showered in tokens.
Oh, man. We got a lot of tokens turned in, though. It was good. It was good.
Sad that Josh isn't here to talk about Crazy Don's Discount Token Emporium. Did you get a lot of people asking about Crazy Don's Discount Token Emporium?
We did.
Awesome. I was worried because it was only like the day before.
It was a lot of fun. And then, actually, I don't think I got... Nope. I was going to say I didn't get told any pirate jokes, but I literally wasn't told any pirate jokes until somebody came up to tell one, and I just looked at him. And he said, I got the look. I don't need to actually, you know, punish you. And then Zosa was standing right behind him, and he's like, "Yar, John!" And I'm like, God, because I almost got away with the whole weekend without having one.
I would have gotten away with it, too.
If it hadn't been
like Zosa.
Zosa, yeah. She loves it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That one was real stretch. It was a real stretch. But when we've completely depleted the well of internet pirate jokes. Oh.
Ooh. Well done. Well played, sir.
Nigel, did you see Doctor Strange?
I did.
Did you like it?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it the most of any of the Marvel movies I've seen, period.
I was going to say, it's in my top three or four Marvel films, I think.
Yeah, but they're all just a little short. They come up a little bit short.
You enjoyed it more than Guardians?
Yeah, 100%.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I enjoy Damn. Guardians. I'm not like saying they're bad movies. The problem is like they all need to be about 40 minutes longer, and they just put too much crap in that doesn't have to be there. Like, he didn't need to have the... I thought Mads Mikkelsen was wasted as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean 40 minutes shorter?
40 minutes. They need to add 40 minutes.
Just to add 40 minutes.
Yeah,
already like 2 hours?
To add more depth.
They're like an hour and 40.
They want to hit you with like, he's a world-class doctor. And then, you know, he's a world-class doctor until one day a car accident changed him forever. I'll never do surgery again. And then they have to have like a montage where he's like learning to live again. You'll be free again.
That was one of
don't interrupt Nigel. But he's going on a golden movie rant.
But like, they just did it. It's been in like so many dumb movies. Yeah. And they finally did it. Like, it's like, God. But then they have to do it really fast because they're like, but we got to make it quick because he's got to find a big bad guy who, of course, wants to destroy the planet. And so now in the last year, somebody Marvel-related has saved the planet from just, like, the apocalypse. Why is every bad guy... Doesn't anybody just want $5 million? Can't you just... Doesn't anybody just...
I think that's a problem with Doctor Strange himself, based on... I was talking to Andy Podell, who knows much more about comics than I do.
Oh, jeez, he's mansplaining.
And apparently Doctor Strange is Doctor Strange is, like, ultra-mega OP. And that's the problem that he has in the Marvel universe is that all of his villains are that apocalyptic because he just immediately solves any non-apocalyptic problems.
That doesn't actually address, because so Chiwetel Ejiofor was like the guy, his sort of helpy buddy,
yeah,
his Abila buddy,
the guy from Serenity.
Yeah. And so like he helped him, and then they became they never became rivals. He just was like, I'm mad about something, and he storms off. And then in the post credits, he's like, I'm a bad guy. You're like, well, why wasn't he the bad guy? That would have been way more interesting, way more compelling.
Yeah, that probably could have been done. I mean, but I also, of all of his villains, apparently Dormammu, the one in this one, is the most serious and kind of the most iconic. So it's sort of like putting the Joker in Batman's origin story.
Dormammu could have still been in it. Like, that could have, like, literally just not have it be Mads Mikkelsen. Have him have Doctor Strange realize that the super chick is using dark power, and then Chiwetel Ejiofor is like, well, that's not cool, because he's basically like a super lawful paladin. But then he would get super mad and then like kill her and then make a pact with Dormammu. You know, like, they could have just kind of changed. They could have actually written in justification for Chiwetel Ejiofor's character to be whoever Mads Mikkelsen was.
Yeah.
And it would have been awesome, because they would have been like brothers who ended up not liking each other.
Brother versus brother.
Exactly. And it could have been way more
compelling. And they would have needed 40 more minutes to do that.
No, that's the way they could have used the same time frame, because that's the problem, is that they had to work in Mads Mikkelsen, like, show him stealing a piece of paper and running away with his little buddies, and, like, a dumb fight scene no one cared about, whereas it could have just literally been the origin story of Goober, and he makes an enemy and loses a friend, like, along the way, and then that it ends almost like the Empire, where, you know, Chiwetel Ejiofor goes his way, and he goes his way, and the Master's dead, and stuff's kind of in you know, Dormammu is still out there, you know, like... They could have ended it in a lot better of a spot narratively, but nope.
That being said, the movie was good.
Yeah, it was really good.
My only complaint was the special effects sometimes took me out of the movie. They were like a little too over the top.
Hmm. Well, sometimes they stopped even showing you cool graphics and just literally showed you a kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
You know, like, whoa, dude's like photoshopped onto kaleidoscopes. Awesome.
they weren't CG. They were just literal kaleidoscopes. put the lens
screen a kaleidoscope. Yeah. The amazing thing about it, though, is Benedict Cumberbatch is a phenomenal actor. Like, he's just so good. So that's it also helps. There's actually an SNL skit. It's hilarious because it's an actual subtle skit. It's hard to know why it's funny. In fact, the audience doesn't quite get it. But it's basically like Benedict Cumberbatch plays like a school professor, and he's like talking to the student. And he's, like, telling him this, like, story about, like, a warm summer day when I was a kid. And then it's just this, like, young idiot from the SNL cast. He's like, yep, yep. And he just can't act for crap. And then, like, Benedict Cumberbatch is, like, delivering an Oscar. And they just keep cutting back. And, like, Benedict Cumberbatch is like, so are you going to see you next week? And he's like, yep. And then he, like, Benedict Cumberbatch, like, looks at him, like, longingly. And then he just looks back, like, like, what's going on? And then Benedict, like, leans in and starts to kiss him. And he's like, not into that, bro. And then he's like, but I thought with you here every week, and he gets like super crestfallen, and he like stands up, and he's like, but what am I thinking? This could never have happened. I'm supposed to be married, but why would my father not allow me to be in love with a man. And he starts like throwing stuff, and he just has like this like awesome like acting. he's taking this stupid SNL skit, and he's like just nailing it. Like, I'm just like, this guy's amazing. But yeah, also, and also 100% like Doctor Strange. He's so good.
Was a little annoying kid Jimmy Fallon.
It was the new Jimmy Fallon, like their new guy. Okay. He's their like, he's like 19 years old. He's like their resident guy who just like smokes pot and comes on in random bits.
Gotcha.
Like, he's actually not bad, but he's a hilariously bad actor. So it sort of it really they kept cutting to him like, this is interesting, bro. Like, he just had nothing to say. It was so good.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, same.
It was overall a really good one. There was a game show. I think I was telling John about it, so you don't want it. But the game show was, why is Cumberbatch hot?
And yeah, they had those, no, I've seen that.
Cumberbatch and two of the girls in the cast. Yeah. He was like, it was Beck Bennett. I was like, so like, seriously, what do you see in this guy? Like, why is he hot? She's like, it's not really his like face so much, but like, it's kind of like the way he talks, and then just sort of the how he like looks at you, and then just makes me kind of like, ugh. And then she's like, starts talking, and she starts basically having an orgasm. And he's like, no, it's okay, you can stop talking. She's like, but I'm almost finished.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then he like finally asks, he like goes through and asks like, you know, all the two girls, and he finally asks Bennett, why do you think you're so hot? Like, you're not hotter than this guy. And it's like just a picture of him behind him, you know, like, and he keeps showing Benedict Cumberbatch the picture of Benedict Cumberbatch, and see him making like a total like derp face, like he's just like, you know, just looks like he's yeah, it's basically like Chili at War Machine Weekend or whatever. So they take like the worst possible picture of Cumberbatch, and they take like Beck Bennett glamour shot, like, who's hotter between these two guys, you know? And then Bennett Cumberbatch's like, I think you actually are hotter. You've got like the V, you've got great abs, you're like in shape, you've got like I don't see any reason why you aren't handsome, you know, like, and you're definitely in these two pictures, you're clearly the better looking guy. He's like, really? And he's like, and he's just like talking a little bit, but then he gets like entranced by Cumberbatch just talking, and he's like, he starts like, I feel like when you look at me, I exist and I'm truly known. And then he starts, yeah, Bennett like falls in love with him basically on the spot. So yeah, that was another good spit. Get,
yeah, that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah,
man, how long has it been since Saturday Night Live has been good? Like 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Tom Hanks is bananas.
An election year, basically.
Yeah.
I think their election stuff is some of the least funny parts. Like, obviously, Trump.
I mean,
being
Tom
Trump
Hanks
is,
on it was.
Tom Hanks was bananas.
Yeah.
He was really good.
Yeah,
and that wouldn't have happened.
I love Tom's monologue about the being America's dad.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that?
No.
Yeah, you're growing hair in weird places or whatever. Yeah.
Listen, America.
I love them.
I know you're going through a tough time. It was just him having like the talk with America.
That's highly entertaining.
I loved the Black Jeopardy skit.
Yeah, that's the only one I saw, but it was glorious.
He's just like, it's been nice knowing you, Jeff.
Well, Doug, it was good while it lasted. You didn't see David Pumpkins?
No.
Oh, yeah. It's magical.
It's such a weird bit, but it's amazing. Like, it totally like pays off at the end too.
But yeah. So yeah, Saturday Night Live, randomly being good.
2 weeks in a row.
Twice in the same month.
I haven't stopped watching it since like the 80s. I literally still just watch it every Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think they're in a kind of a good place right now, like they're in a upswing.
I don't know how long Kenan Thompson's been on it, but
a few years.
Over 10 years.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
A long time.
Well, he's just such a perfect fit for it. Like, he's been doing comedy since he was like a kid.
Yeah.
Cuz I watched him on like kids' comedy shows.
Kenan and Kel.
All that, sir.
I think it's weird that he's still on it, though, because most people kind of use it as a platform for about 3 or 4 years, yeah, and then they go on and do movies.
And then make horrible Adam Sandler films.
Yeah,
maybe he just likes it.
He could, but to my understanding is it's a huge grind. It's a really miserable grind. So maybe. It's amazing that he's just toughed it out for like over 10 years.
Well, All That, which is where you got to start, was basically the kid version of SNL.
Yeah.
So he's been doing it for even longer than that, if you think about it like that way.
I think of him as like the current Phil Hartman. He's that guy that you just plug into any kind of role, like kind of as a straight man. Oftentimes, he's like a straight man with like a goofy smile. Like, he's kind of in on the joke,
yeah.
But he doesn't crack up like Jimmy Fallon. Like, it's not so funny to him that he can't like conduct himself like a professional.
Yeah, God, I love, like, my favorite host, I think, of all time is Christopher Walken. And, like, he does. he also does like the I'm just so serious during this role and just doesn't break. And then like they for some reason pair Jimmy Fallon with him like half the time.
Yeah.
And it just
Horatio Sandals would be better. Yeah.
Because there's a scene where, like, He's like, you say tomato, and I say tomato. Yeah. You say, and like Jimmy Fallon interrupts him, and he's just like, what do you mean? He's like, no, it's you say tomato, I say tomato. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not what the teleprompter says. And like Jimmy Fallon just can't handle himself and just starts immediately laughing. And Christopher Walken's just like got this confused, like legitimately confused look on his face. Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
Christopher Walken is amazing, and Jimmy Fallon is a hack.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fact. I do like his ice cream, though. The
Jimmy Fallon has an ice cream?
The Ben & Jerry's Tonight Dough. It's got his face on it. It's really good.
God dang it.
Yeah. I hate buying that ice cream because it has Jimmy Fallon's face on it, but it's so good.
Nice. Well, we actually have stuff to talk about today, so we can probably just jump right in if you guys want.
Splash.
Everybody right, warmed
if
up?
If we still want to warm up a little bit, though, then go
one second. I got to go to the bathroom.
I just got to warm up in other ways.
His town ain't big enough for the two of us.
That's fighting words.
Oh my god! What was the election one, or what was the thanks Obama one?
I can't remember what the lead up was, but it was good. Explosion in the middle. Like the guy just exploded in the middle. I can't remember.
Keith, what was the game we were playing at War Machine Weekend? Deception, is that it?
Deception, Murder in Hong Kong.
That was pretty good.
The game was good.
It's all right.
You played the most of it, though. Does it break down after a little while?
It gets tiresome, but anything gets tiresome if you do it long enough.
Well,
like, because it's a fairly short and simple game, you can burn out if you play 70 rounds of it in a weekend.
Did you get a chance to play Secret Hitler?
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was pretty good. The theme notwithstanding.
It's basically Resistance, but it's made by the Cards Against Humanity guys, so it's got Hitler in it just because, basically.
Someone told me it was
just to be edgy.
Worse than Resistance. I've never played Resistance, but there was a problem in Secret Hitler. If you have like three fascists in a row, it's just if you have everyone clumped together, it just ruins the game. Because there was games where I was a fascist and I went first, and then by doing it, like the first thing is always like play a liberal policy, and then we went through like seven more liberals before we got back to a fascist, so the game was over before I got a second turn as a president. So
And I mean it goes quickly, so that's not the end of the world when that happens. But yeah, that doesn't happen in Resistance, which is nice. Yeah. But Resistance has, I don't know, from playing Resistance, there's a simpleness to the Secret Hitler style that makes it a little bit more appealing in some respects because it keeps things moving a little faster.
Yeah.
Like you can get bogged down in the discussion phase in Resistance a little easier because there's more decisions to make. And the problem I run into is some people playing games like that is it is impossible to make completely accurate deductions that you will never have enough information. If you did, the game would be too easy.
Right.
So people will spend like they'll just keep trying to logic their way out and go in circles when it's just like, no, we're just going to have to, take the information we have plus our gut feeling and make a call here.
Yeah. At some point the whole game is based on reading people and like doing the poker thing.
Right.
We played,
it's almost exactly like poker. You have a little bit of information and then a read.
Right. We played that game Spyfall, and I've been trying to describe that game to other people because it's just like, this game's so simple, but I've never had another game before that was so simple yet so difficult.
Yeah, the explanation, you're like, oh, that sounds easy and fun. And then you try to play it and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're just like, I mean, we played it for like an hour, and normally after, it doesn't take me usually very long to be like, okay, I've got this game kind of figured out. And I was just like, I'm like, after the hour playing, I walked away from the table and I'm just like, I'm just bad at that game. Like, I just don't think I can do it. And I think every single person at the table felt that.
Pretty much everybody felt that way, except I had a pseudo, it was accidentally brilliant maneuver that made me feel pretty awesome, but it wasn't 100% intentional. So
yeah.
But yeah, the basis of the game, for listeners who are going insane because they don't know what the hell we're talking about, is that there's X number of people, and one of them is a spy. Everybody else knows where they are. The spy does not know where you are. The goal of the people who are not spies is to find out who the spy is, and the goal of the spy is to find out where he is. And so
by which he means that, like, you pass out cards to everybody, and it's just like the card will basically just say, like, you're on a train, or like you're in a, you know, ballroom, or like you're at the embassy, or you're at the zoo, or whatever.
You're at a corporate party. You're part of a carnival.
Yeah.
There's like 20 different options.
Okay.
And so the play of the game is you ask someone a question and they answer it, and then they ask someone a question and they answer it. Repeat until either the spy can guess where you are, where, until the spy will make a guess as to where he is, or you can vote, the players can vote on who they think the spy is.
Right. So if the spy, so if you ask the spy a question and he answers with something that's completely not related to where you are, then you, everyone's just like, I'm pretty sure we know who the spy is, like it's him, and that's how you win. Versus like if you keep asking questions and like people are just asking really obvious questions, like, you know, I can't even think of bad questions now. Like, this game, it just gets in your head.
The bad questions are yes or no ones.
No, I mean, like, a question that, like, totally gives away where you are. Like, did you have any trouble with the, like, security here? Like, getting through the security lines? And then, you know, people are like, oh, we're at the airport, or, like, right? Or we're in a plane or whatever. And they're just like,
yeah,
oh.
the really bad one would be if you're trying to be cute and it's like, how's it going today? Oh, you know, I'm keeping things on the rails. We're on the train.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's so, yeah, it's just like that, because at the first we were like, everyone was trying to be like really clever, and then there's just this point in the like in the game where it's just it gets to your turn and you both don't know how to answer the question, and you also don't know how to ask the question. Like, you're just like, I don't know, because you want to answer vaguely, but you also want to answer so that everyone knows that you're not the spy, and if you answer too specifically, then the spy is just like guesses it immediately. So it's really tough. But it's actually really fun.
Sounds
interesting. For a game that has no mechanics other than question and answer and has no materials to it other than a single card in front of you, it is incredibly brain intensive.
I'm in. I'd play that.
Nigel, did you try out Secret World?
Damn right I did.
Tell us about it.
It made my weekend.
Nice.
It's really awesome. I don't know how much we want to go into the tank, but like, you and Keith have to 100% play it. Come on, guys.
Okay.
It's really good. It's very story-driven. It's just like all cutscenes. So when you go talk to a quest hub, it's always like a person sitting at their house or whatever, and then you just talk to them. They'll give you between one and four quests. Not at the same time. You have to do them in one at a time. And there's like movie sequences. It's all voice acted, and it's very...
It's good, though?
Oh, my God. It's very good. What's this? The Secret World. It's an MMO that's set in modern day, and it's basically like if all the mythos from every culture was real, then it all converges like on some sort of huge, you know, it's basically like we're always like one day before the apocalypse, essentially.
Oh.
And three factions are desperately trying to delay it. So every day the good guys win and we get to like spend one more day on the planet. And as it all started happening, as all the weird like Cthulhu stuff started coming through, you know, portals.
Actually, I just realized a really good explanation for the Secret World.
Hmm.
It's basically just Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, basically.
It's like if Cabin in the Woods was an MMO.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very,
yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. It's so story driven and awesome, and then it's set in modern day, and your character can look like whatever you want him to look like, guy or girl, all the clothing and cool ID, you know, options. And the combat at first is a little futzy, but then I actually really enjoy like the fighting dudes. Yeah, it's really good. Like, it gets better and better the more I play it. So
have you done any, like, how does the party stuff work out? Like, is it the kind of game that breaks down if we get like five people in, or would it just be awesome?
Party stuff is really awesome, but there are times where it's really not so fun. Like, there's quest types where you have to, like, towards the end of the quest, you'll go into an instance, and it's only for just one person. And so you'll each go into your own instances. So you're in a group doing the quest. You'll advance the quest to the certain point together, but then you'll have to go, like, clear out the sewers by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's super intimidating, especially if somebody's playing more of a supporty character.
Right.
Then it's, like, hard for them. Or if, like, you have a bunch of high-level guys kiting a low-level guy, which is what happened to me. I had a high-level guy kiting me around, and then occasionally we're like, well, you're off on your own, buddy. And they're like, ugh.
I was just having flashbacks of Adam doing the Healing Proving Grounds.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow, back in the day.
Yeah, all of us furiously just waiting.
Yeah.
Yep.
While he's just swearing.
Yep.
Mother F, God damn it.
Yep.
Yeah, he would never, like, oh, I lost. It was always just a string of cuss words.
Well, it was...
Ah!
Especially because, like, you go through 20 waves or whatever,
And by wave 8, he's like, I think this is good. This is fine.
Just I
like,
got this one.
Yeah, yeah, he's just totally calm. And then like he starts getting quiet for a while. And then, yeah, then there's just more activity on his keyboard. And it just gets reaches a cacophony of, like, slamming crap around and dogs snorting and things falling down in his house. And he just, he just starts screaming. Yeah, it's amazing.
I miss that.
Yeah, I totally miss that.
Oh, I miss it.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. But yeah, the cool thing about Secret World is there's no, it's not asking a whole lot of your computer, so you can use crappy computers. And
yeah, because it's like 4 or 5 years old. Something.
Yep.
I don't know. The thing that kind of got me was just that it's all voice acted. It sounds very immersive.
You played it?
No, just Nigel was telling me about some of the quests. Okay. Some of the quests sound amazing.
Yeah, the quests are very detailed. They're very interesting.
Have you seen anything better than the Johnny Bravo quest from last week?
In a lot of ways, yeah. That one's probably the most cool one, like the funnest. And I haven't got to it yet either. But once I got Jeffrey Combs is the H.P. Lovecraft actor. He's the head of a school for, like, basically, he's the head of Miskatonic. And it's amazing. His quests are amazing, and he comes in several other people's cutscenes. Also, the story is so, like, cross-pollinated. Like, I advanced a main story. Yeah, anyways, that's, like, some of the quests are interesting because they're really next level. Like, you have to listen to what they're saying. And you can always just Google and cheat if you want. But it's fun to try it just using your brain first.
It's like a puzzle.
But sometimes it's like a puzzle, but it's sometimes you'll walk up on her and you'll take her quest and it'll start the sequence. And she's just at a campfire talking about how, like, these Wendigos were always around, and then, like, her husband got in a car accident and he never came home the night she came. And, like, in her story, she'll tell you, like, it was, you know, he was on a treacherous bend in the rain. And, like, you have to just kind of pay attention, because then you can just go find that location and find out where he got in his car accident. And then when you do it, you'll investigate the area, and things will happen. I don't even know how I figured it out, but, like, you investigate the things, and then the car lights, the headlights start flashing, and it's, like, literally Morse code. And it's basically telling you, like, I'm in the Vale, you know, like, help me, I'm in the Vale. And you have to, like, kill yourself and show back up with your ghost. Like, you run back to your corpse, like, wow. And then when you're in ghost form, so you do actually complete a lot of quests in dead form. Like, you have to kill yourself.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff like that, where it's like, if you know Morse code or Latin or you're familiar with the Bible, you'll solve it easier. There's one girl who is just like, she gives you a quest, but she's singing. When you walk in on her, she's singing this song about, like, six sisters around a fire or whatever. And you just sort of, I didn't think of it. I was just, like, trying to figure out what she wants me to find somebody. She wants me to find her, like, aunt, you know, her dead aunt or something like that, or put her aunt to rest or whatever. And in her song, she's singing about, like, six sisters around the fire. Well, when you go through her mansion, there's, like, a painting of, like, six women around a fire. And you're like, oh, and you investigate the painting, and, like, a key falls out. And then the name of the painting is Psalms 10:10. And you have to actually go research the Bible. You have to, like, literally Google it. And you can, there's the in-game browser, so if you can search there if you want. It's really cool. There's, like, a lot of...
Sounds really good.
It's fan effing.
It sounds more like, it doesn't even sound like an MMO. It basically sounds just like a Resident Evil.
It is. It's probably more single player currently than it is group. You can do it as a group, but single player, I think it's more rewarding because you're
fine
not,
with that.
Yeah.
That sounds like everything I like about the Star Wars MMO.
It's all the same game. It's Funko. They also did Dark Age Camelot, and they did Anarchy Online.
Oh my God. Dark Age.
Yep.
Old school.
Old school.
And they got recently a huge investment, some big pocketed donor, like, invested a ton of money in the company. So they're, like, really blowing out, like, the Secret World currently in Anarchy Online. Anarchy Online got a reskin, so it's all current graphics.
Wait, Anarchy Online is still online?
Yeah, actually, I played it last year. I missed the game so much, I played it last year.
Whoa.
And the graphics were so bad that I just, like, wanted to kill myself.
The game's from, like, 2005.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And the graphics,
no, it's even earlier than that.
I think it's like 2002. Yeah, or 2001.
Yeah, it's like 2002.
Yep,
because WoW was in 2005, and that game was, like, out way before WoW.
Yeah, I played a lot of WoW or Anarchy Online before WoW.
Yeah,
but yeah, the graphics have been reskinned to be Secret World level, and then Secret World's getting their new influx of stuff. So real quick, the last time I talked about the pay structure, it's not pay to play. You just buy the game and you can play it for free, but there are. And you can also buy a super pack. Like, for $30, you can just play the game. For $60, you can have, like, these 11 base expansions, which covers a lot of stuff. But they're still very unique. Like, they write in random quests. So once you're 10th level and you're just running around doing endgame content, they'll write in level 10 quests and put them back. They'll embed them back in the old content. So you'll have to go back to King's Mouth and do more, like, Cthulhu stuff. And so you'll see those quests, and they'll have like a little coin next to it. Like, you have to buy this, and it's like $3, but you can buy that little one quest for like $1.50 or $3, whatever. And then they go down in price, how depending on how old the quests are. And to my knowledge, they don't sell packs. Like, you can't buy a super pack that just has all that. So there's that.
They do have packs. I saw that they have what they call episodes, and they have like 17 episodes released or whatever. That's supposed to...
That's the super pack I'm talking about with all their expansions.
Right, like, but it has like all of those, and then...
Because that's what I bought, and they have... Because it costs $60.
Yeah.
But then when you get there, there's still extra ones, because it comes with like a motor... If you buy that quest, it comes with like a motorcycle, or it comes with other like stuff. So they also sell these little packs with like a vanity item. So it's weird, but you don't need to do those. Like, it's not, you know...
Sure.
They're all level 10. Like, I couldn't currently do them anyways, because they'd be super hard. But down the road, it might be annoying.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any way to get around that, too. Like, if
there's in-game currency that you can
exactly.
buy them with or something.
Yeah. Like, if you level up high enough, then you can go back and...
Sure.
I don't know. Regardless, it sounds interesting enough for me to try it. So it's just too bad that we just missed the big Halloween sale.
Yes. I missed it, which really bummed me out. I was like, ah, I missed it by whatever.
A day.
Like a day.
A day.
Well, the holiday sale's coming up, so...
Yeah. Yeah, right. It was like $13 on the holiday sale, and now it's $29 for the base game, and then
you got ripped off.
Super brutal. Yeah, it's been worth it though. I actually love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Nigel, did you hear the absolutely incredible Diablo news?
I did. That they're bringing Diablo 2 into Diablo 3.
Diablo 1.
They're bringing Diablo 1 into Diablo.
Oh yeah. Okay, that also is incredible. Yeah, that's actually pretty amazing.
And I mean, that's cool and all. But, I mean, the real news is that the Necromancer is coming.
Which is them kind of bringing Diablo 2 into Diablo 3.
Yeah, yeah, that's super awesome. Yeah. That's actually very interesting.
I'm so pumped basically about Diablo 1. Also, I've heard all these rumors that, or all the gaming sites are talking about rumors that, like, Blizzard is working on remastering all of their old games, like, with updated graphics. And this just, like, almost confirms it to me. So I'm just like, yes, it's just a matter of time until Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3, you know, and, like, Starcraft 1 basically are, like, remade. With sweet graphics.
It's one of the amazing things about video games, because this is happening in movies. It's been happening for decades in movies. If a movie's been out for 10 years, they remake it and it's garbage. With video games, though, it's like, you know, Resident Evil 1 with new graphics. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know.
Right.
Oh, my God.
It's not like, oh, no, they're going to ruin it. It's like, sweet.
Yeah, because they do it right. They're not, like, trying to crap on the previous.
Well, except for FF7.
I'm still looking forward to FF7. Yeah. I've kind of given up on the fact that they're going to... the mechanics are going to be exactly how I want them to be. But what I'm mostly excited for is a good retranslation.
Yes.
I feel like I missed a lot in Final Fantasy VII because the translation was quite poor.
It was bad.
So I'm looking forward to like a Final Fantasy Tactics level retranslation.
You mean a War of the Lions level? Because Final Fantasy Tactics also did not have the best translation.
Obviously not in the same style, since Middle Ages is a bit inappropriate for the Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, sure.
Keith, did you pick up Blood Mirror yet?
Blood Mirror?
Yeah, isn't that the new Lightbringer book?
Oh, no. No, I have not.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, parts of it are a little weird, but they start explaining a lot of like what happened before. Like, you start getting a glimpse of like how there became two prisms and all that fun stuff, so it's really good.
Sweet. It's not the last one, is it?
No. No. Not even close.
Okay.
This one might drag on for a while, I think, actually.
That's fine.
Yep.
Well, I say it's fine now, but eventually he'll lose his pace for writing like every author does, and then it won't be fine anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I am had it up to here with Jim Butcher.
What?
This is the longest we've ever gone without a Dresden book.
Do you think it's because he did his other book, Cinder Spire?
Probably.
Yeah.
I refuse to buy any of his other books because I don't want to encourage his bad behavior.
Is there any news on that front? I mean, we're due, right? Like, overdue?
We are overdue, and no, there's no release date.
Lame.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about War Machine.
I guess.
We got tons of ground to cover today.
We do.
That is true.
Episode 288.
288.
Who wants to intro this week?
You're the intro guy.